fall about 31.5%. But looking at the current financial year, which is 2017-18, the compensation of employees account for 77.5%, and goods and services account for about 21%. What is of interest also to note there is the payments for financial assets. This relates to the legal fees that we as the department paid on behalf of the minister. And I've just put the 1,000 just for everyone to have an indication to say if there was no budget allocated for that. Now, if, for instance, we say that we had about 1,000, now that is the percentage on which we had to spend, if we had to spend about 2.6 million from this program. This actually was some funds that we were hoping that we were going to recover, but because we couldn't recover them, therefore we recorded them as a loss. And therefore we find that if we use the savings that we had as a department to try to pay for this, and from each and every program, we try to identify savings from which we had to pay for these losses. Next page. Looking at Program 2, Intersectoral Coordination and Strategic Partnerships. Here we are saying that the program spent 22.8 million against the 22.2 million, which accounts for about 103%. But this was before the environment was conducted. In essence, if you compare the audited outcome against the current financial, which is 17-18, the indication is that this program has found a decrease in their budget of about 3.1%. Next slide. Again, within the intersectoral coordination and strategic partnership, but currently we're dealing with the economic classification. Again, if you look at payments for capital assets, you'll see that there was about 1.2 million, which was allocated also, which was used to cover for the loss which we had against those legal fees. Within this program, if you compare the audited outcome against the 17-18 appropriation, you will realize that within 17-18, the budget for compensation of employees will account for 69%, while that of goods and services will account for approximately 30%. And this compared against the 15-16, whereby the compensation was approximately 50%, and the goods and services also approximately 50%. Moving on to the next slide. Program 3, Legislation and Policy Development. The program has spent about 87.8% of the allocated budget of 24.4 million. Again, if you compare the audited outcome against the estimated appropriation for the current financial year, you'll realize that there's an increase of budget allocation of about 7.7%. Next slide. Program 3, economic classification. Again, within this program, we are saying that based on the savings that were discovered, we had payment for capital assets. We used about 2.1 million to pay towards the legal fees. And if you compare against compensation of employees and goods and services, we are saying for the audited outcome during the 15-16 financial year, compensation of employees accounted for 53.6%, while that of goods and services accounted for about 45%, compared to the current financial year, whereby the compensation of employees takes about 65%, whereas goods and services takes about 34%. Next slide. Program 4, Civilian Oversight, Monitoring and Evaluation. The program spent 93.3% of the allocated budget for the financial year which has just ended. But again, if you compare the budget increase from the audited outcome of 15-16 to the current 17-18 financial year, there's an increase of about 8.9% in this program. Moving on to the next slide. We still within program four. Here again, we'd like to compare the compensation of employees against goods and services. We are saying within the audited outcome, which is 15-16, the program had 57.7% of its budget specifically for compensation of employees, whilst the allocation for goods and services was about 41%. This compared against the current financial year 17-18, whereby 68% has been allocated to compensation of employees and about 31% allocated to goods and services. Next slide. Something that is already known to everyone, then in this instance, I would like to share to remind the members that the following are the inter alia sum of the high levels, the root cause of the root causes that led to the audited, to the qualified audit opinion for the previous financial year, which is 2014-15 and 15-16 financial year. The main root causes were identified as the lack of stability at top and senior management levels, the general high vacancy rate at senior and middle management, but also at junior levels, the lack of implementation of the supply chain financial systems, particularly Logis, which is used by supply chain and financial management to manage the transactions, the lack of sound financial management policies and procedures, inadequate skills of the current staff of the department, the lack of effective information and communication, that is ICT. To try and address these particular matters, which we hope that they will provide a positive audit outcome for the current financial year and going forward, these are some of the matters that have been put forward by the department. Almost all senior management posts were filled. You can consider, for instance, the appointment of the secretary, the appointment of the chief financial officer, the chief information officer appointment, as well as that of the director for knowledge management. There's also an ongoing training on the current staff within the department, and the department has also established the management audit steering committee to make sure that we address all those previous audit outcomes and even the ones that are coming. And then the internal audit continuously review our action plans to address all such findings. And thank you. That will be it.
That's the presentation. All right. Thank you very much. Members, we now come to questions, concerns, and further deliberations. A few things on my side, and then we'll start from Honourable Bele's side. Secretary, I must compliment the Secretariat. They're the only jurisdiction falling under us who complied with our timeline in terms of the submission of declarations of interest. Thank you for that. Now, I also indicated with the police budget interview, we had an interaction with the AGSA on Monday evening, focusing on all institutions falling under our portfolio. And they raised in some issues that I just want to put on the table because it referred to the review of your APPs. They raised again the issue some performance indicators were not well defined, some targets were not specified and measurable. So that was on the table. I presume there was discussions. But just to take one example, for example, the visits to police stations conducted per year. I mean, there's not a clear indication what is going to be the aim, what is the process really, if you look at the indicators. So I think if you can just maybe attend to that, that issues going forward, that will be appreciated. Then I think the focus from the new minister on focusing on the strategic role of the Secretariat as a advising and policy body is correct, because the Secretariat can't be a super chief of staff of the minister. That can't be. It won't work, and it didn't work in the past. So I think we welcome that approach, that strategic role. But it's a very ambitious plan. I think there's more than 20 steps that you envisage. And again, I asked the same question that I've asked the secretary maybe last year. Do you've got the team to do it? You know, it's a two-year time span. Maybe just in terms of the broader legislative framework, and maybe other colleagues will deal with that. I think, as the committee, we are not happy with the snail pace of the legislation. You can put all the issues on the table, but I think that's why we welcome the state of police document, because a lot of the steps that's been indicated now, that's been put forward by the executive authority, will depend on the analysis, because a lot of the steps that's been indicated now is steps got to do maybe with perception, maybe in terms of general visibility, community outreach, but the fundamental issues dealing with the state of policing, the broader issues in terms of demilitarization, in terms of conduct, in terms of professionalism, that at the end of the day is going to affect the service. And I mean, that's what we want to see. So we welcome those steps, and it's core business, but you can't do that if you don't deal with the fundamentals. And that's why I just want to get the sense. That's why the SAPS Amendment Act is so important. Because in the next few months, there's going to be appointment of a new national commissioner. There will have to be a new DPCI head. And a lot of the challenges we had during this last few years about leadership flows from the old SAPS Act that's inadequate. The processes are not efficient. Even with the DPCI head, some civil society groups already said they're going to challenge that legislation with the new appointment process, and they might be successful because Parliament is involved in the process of getting rid of the gentleman or lady, but not in the appointment process. So there's glaring, let's say, discrepancies. Now, if we say we're going to leave that to last, it's 2 years down the line, we must deal with the leadership issues. And we can't deal with the leadership issues and the structure if we don't deal with the legislation first. So I just want to get a sense, why are we going to have this lapse between the white paper process and the Amendment Act in 2 years? Because that means that even the new police commissioner won't be appointed in terms of the National Police Board proposal that asks for an interview process, competency assessments and so on. So I just want to get a sense. If we say the white paper is the document, why are we not prioritizing it? Equally, it will be good if it can be also coupled with the IPED Act, because, and even the Secretariat Act, because all of them must speak the same language, because you're going to do now one act and maybe there will be some changes to be affected. So I just want to get the rationale for that going forward. How do we deal with that? That will be the first few things from my side. Honourable Bele.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think there's just two quick ones from my side. The first one is just seeking clarity on the meaning of the statements, because I didn't think it meant what it sounded like it means, but then I couldn't think what it does mean. And that's on slide, they're not numbered, but it's the bullet points about the strategic plan. Where it talks about one of the focus areas being repositioning of the civilian secretariat as the new Department of Police, which will require a new organizational structure. I just wanted to just get clear on what does that mean, because it sounds like it's talking about renaming the department as the Department of Police, but that wouldn't make sense. So what does repositioning as the new Department of Police mean? And then on slide, I think it's 12, it didn't sound accurate to me. It's the one that breaks down the vacancies per business units and salary level. It didn't look accurate to speak of there being zero vacancies in the DPCI judge, because if these figures were finalized in April, which is what I heard in the presentation, that should have taken into account the vacancy caused by the passing of Judge Musa. So is it the case that they were just finalized before then, or is this in fact an error of some kind? Thanks, Chair.
On Mutlungu? The microphone, honourable member.
What I wanted to talk to Chairperson is, well, maybe is a request to you, Chair, that when I look at, unfortunately, it's difficult also to point out as to what page. But the ministerial outline, I can see the minister has got this kind of, where there is a part where he calls for approval of the use of force. I think really, Chairperson, sometimes we will need to somehow maybe have a time to meet with the minister and get an understanding of him on this, because we might actually find that we are going to and fro on this question of use of force as if it is not covered in the Act itself in terms of the laws of self-defense. I don't understand whether then we want to amplify it into a regulation or what, and it might be confusing, and we might find ourselves going back to square one and the whole thing that has been done actually being undermined by that. So I'm trying to say that we need to guard against, and I think members have raised, like for example, Honorable Groenewald and others, that we need to guard against selective approach on these matters, whereby members of the public, when they apply an act of self-defense, then they are punished by the law, but the police then are just doing as much as they like, at times not even for purposes of self-defense, but for acts of silencing, given those people who are seen to be raising some other issues. I know, for example, Chairperson, that I will repeat the same question that I raised in our previous meeting about the execution of that guy whom I saw on ENCA in Johannesburg, by Johannesburg Metro. Totally, totally bizarre, killing a civilian person like that for no obvious reasons. Now, I think we need to guard against these things, because we have seen, even under the previous dispensation, though General Kele, as a former commissioner, did very well, but we know exactly of the deplorable situation this thing caused, particularly in KZN, which ended up creating that question that we have of the TPCI unit of KZN being suspended. So I think we need to be very careful about these things. So that was it, Chairperson. Otherwise, I'm really in agreement with the way the report has been crafted, particularly showing the trends of expenditure and also the willingness to even cap some kind of escalation. I think that is good.
Honourable Ramadakani.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair, and also thanks the Department's presentation on a number of issues. You know, and well, the starting point for me maybe is I don't think it's a matter that can be clarified by Secretariat. If you look at this page, the ministerial priority has got a number of things, including what you call the silencing of a gun, including what you say the approval of use of force. Now that is a matter I think that would have to be engaged with the minister. Because it looks like a policy, that directive that is going to come up. And Secretariat, you are an advisor on policy matters. You advise and you provide the content of the policy direction. So what you understand by this policy or force of that is contained in the ministerial direction here, the use of force policy, but what is that? Maybe if you could explain it so that we understand it. Because I think I'm just worried about the slippages and of language that may take us down the wrong road. The wrong road in the sense that you see, if we have a language, and I think you are a lot of language practitioners, you start unleashing, using the language that unleashes firepower into the hands of the people who are firing machines. You need to at least navigate and tell us what is the long-term implication of this language, because it has language. And if you're going to have my take is that in the current police force we have, police services that we have now, we still have probably 80% of what we have inherited. What we inherited people who had firepower in their hands, who had the particular paradigm in terms of policing. That is why the Constitution took a route of service rather than a force, because the power of a gun has that thing of using a force in it. So if we get into that language, and I'm raising it because I don't know what is behind the words here, but just take a pause and think back to where we come from with this language and with actions. So I'm pleading to you as policy gurus that please tread carefully on this language. A momental or moment of setback should not take us into a wrong direction. Well, let me leave that aside, because I think it's a matter that we will have to have a serious engagement. It must be a serious engagement. But coming back to some of the things that you are going to be doing, and I'm happy to see really you took time to prepare the presentation. That's good, and I think that we must give a thumb up for that. But the troubling question for me is always going to be, you know, on paper you can do anything. You can do wonders on paper. But if you don't have the capacity to do what you say you're going to do, it's going to be something else. So I want to get some assurance from you that you have what it takes in terms of capacity in order to implement what you're talking about, including the turnaround, including the financial turnaround, including the 30 days compliance, you know, all the things that you're talking about. So that's one area. The second, maybe the third thing, because I started with the policy issue, the third one, is this issue about priorities. What comes first? Now, I see that, and I think the chair has already started this discussion about this SEPs Act. It's now coming on the last year of a political mandate. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? I think it's a bad thing. The Police Act is riddled with number of weaknesses in it. If you, I understood that the Police Act, so but the time frame shift from all the time, you know, the, it keeps shifting from this year to the next year. I won't be surprised if this shifts to after 2019. But the problem that you have is there's a non-compliance with the Constitution. It's a constitutional issue that got the problem in the current Act. The question I'm asking, Chair, please, is why aren't you, what are the reasons that you're not prioritizing it? Policy-wise, what are the reasons that, because it has to clarify a number of things. So why is it that you are not prioritizing that particular Act? Then the in your presentation, there's also issue about the MOU stuff, the issue that you need to get into MOU, civil society, but you haven't identified which civil society we're talking about. So we need to have an oversight function to you, and you say we will sign the MOU, we'll get into service level agreement. Who with who? If you have not identified that as part of the things that takes us forward. Then rattling down the road, the vetting, personnel vetting. There's long issue standoff that always happened between the staffs and yourself about access to information and the problem of vetting, that personnel are unvetted and therefore they can't give this kind of information. How are we progressing in that field of vetting? You have some target that you've removed, that you've taken off, that they no longer exist. Some has got to do with the monitoring implementation of the white paper targets. But if you have a white paper as a, now you have it, but the implementation, the realization of the white paper, are you implementing it through shelves or for the implementation? And if it is for the implementation, one of the key is bringing up the new act in line with that. So if you don't have targets in relation to the implementation of the white paper that you are able to measure yourself around it, how are we going to be able to know what happened to the white paper? It may end up in a shelf and that's it. And how are we going to keep you accountable in terms of the function that we have as an oversight function? I don't know. Maybe you will maybe just have to help us to understand that. Okay. Budget. I've also seen some of the increases, some increases in terms of, and I want to look for increase for in terms of the venue and facilitations, some increase, but I don't see the indicators of the achieving what we're going to achieve with it. If you can, help me to understand that. And the last one, and I'm crossing fingers on this one, is the time frame that you have in terms of the bills, at least for now, this four part of it, that there's not going to be changed from that, because I think there's been lots of changes, which is a problem for our own credibility and your own credibility if it keep changing from that side. I think if we can at least keep this one, this four ones, and you know that we're not changing, then we know how to plan, and the whole thing about the consultation, because we've got a constitutional requirement to do it as a committee here. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Maybe just to add one thing that Honourable Ahmad Al-Khani said, because at one stage the committee will have to make a decision, maybe on a committee bill. We'll have to seriously consider it. So, Honourable Mabija.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to thank the Civilian Secretariat for the presentation they've done to us. But at the moment, I don't have a question as yet.
Bija, on the Mamula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. My first question is on the disabled target. Since last year, I was asking, when are you going to employ disabled people? The only question that you are telling us, the building is not user-friendly. When are you moving to the new building? Because we are not going until next year. I will be asking these disabled people. My second question. Honorable Mpele asked it because I was going to ask about the DPCI judge office. That is the late judge DPCI Musa being replaced, because you said we have no vacancies. Your presentation doesn't have slides. My other one is EHWP. When is it going to be established at cluster level? Because you said you are going to establish EPHW on cluster level. When is it going to be? It must have time frames, because if you say you are going on next year or 2019, we don't know. And the other one is for audit findings. In the audit findings, it says lack of stability at top level and senior management level. Is there stability now, or is still lack of stability? And my last question. Please explain why there are no public-private partnerships, especially since you have a sub-program called Intergovernmental Civil Society and Public-Private Partnership Program 2. To manage and facilitate intergovernmental civil society and public partnerships. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mula, Honorable Ulubatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is, how do you plan to overcome the problem of vacant posts in SMS? My next one, are your offices still located within SAP's offices? I don't know, maybe in your presentation you touched on it, but maybe it's the time I went outside. My third one, can you explain the increase allocations towards venues, facilities, and consultants? My other one is, can you explain what led to the removal of the performance indicator for the funding model of Community Safety 4? Thank you.
Thank you, members. That's the first round. Secretary, and your team, responses, thank you.
I will, thank you, honorable members, Chairperson. I will address some questions and my colleagues will deal with some of those that I have left out. Firstly, The issue of the target, which are not measurable, visits to police station, because if we go to the technical indicators at the back, it actually explain what that mean. I'll just give an example of the number of oversight visits to police station conducted per year. It says the indicator refers to the visits in police station in order to exercise the civilian oversight function over subs, the subs towards improving police performance and service delivery. So two oversight reports will be produced per year based on data collected during the visits. We use an instrument to do that assessment. I am a proponent of actually even having qualitative targets. But the DPME and the National Treasury, they are very much fast into this issue of numbers, how many, and it becomes difficult. In terms of what will go and we say we have evaluated, we even come and we say since we came last year, what has been the improvement? And there's a report that we actually use to do that. So that technical indicator, the descriptor, it actually tells what it is.
Your Secretary, I want to differ. Okay. The business manager from the AG especially indicated that one and said, for instance, there's no indication what you're actually measuring. Secondly, there's also no indication how you decided on those 22 stations. So I don't know whether there was a discussion between your team and the AG on those, but I'm just conveying what they've conveyed to us.
The comment noted, Honourable Chair. We had a discussion with the AG, but I think it's something that we'll need to engage with them again, because this issue keeps on coming back. And we thought that we had an agreement when we finalised the document. So we'll do a follow up on that. Do we have a team? I must indicate that we are very thin in terms of our legislation drafting. That unit has got three people, excluding the secretary. So it's very thin, and I think we got an additional deputy director post. So it's an area that is thin, which need to be further capacitated. The structure that we're looking in, because first thing what we wanted to do was stabilize the institution as is and make sure that you start operating. Now, all these other additional responsibilities that we have need a different kind of structure and additional resources that we can get. And in terms of government process, it's not easy to get resources immediately. You have to follow the cycle. So our target is that for those areas which we identified that we are thin on, by this round of the budget reviews, we should be able to present a new organizational structure and motivate for additional resources over the MTBF period. But in terms of the team, all the positions of those who report to me, all the chief directors, all those positions are filled. So we have stabilized in this. So the issue about the issue of the instability at top and senior management level is no more an issue currently. The issue about the prioritization, and I agree with you, it's something that we need to go back and think clearly in terms of the issue of the SAPS Amendment Act. Why shouldn't it be prioritized over the others? But it's the same small team that we work with which need to do those amendments. We will look into that, that it doesn't come towards the end, that it needs to be dealt with in between. One of the challenges that we have is some of the processes that we go through. Like, I'll give an example of the Critical Infrastructure Protection Bill. Cabinet is approved, and now the processes of consulting this other department is taking longer than what we thought it would be, which we thought because this process, it goes through administration. The JCPS cluster, which has got all the DGs there, they approved that go ahead. And we thought that we are in agreement. But when it goes to cabinet, then some minister will raise an issue, and then you find that some of the people that you engage with, maybe they didn't engage with their ministers effectively. So those are some of the issues that we find on our way. I remember last time when we came to brief the portfolio committee, I said to the chair, I'm excited now, I've got the critical infrastructure bill. When you come back, is the first thing I'm going to deliver to you. But I can't control some of those issues. We will need to deal with the issue of our program and rethink how we can deal with it, especially the SAPS Act. We will need to re-look into it. The issue about the statement on the repositioning of the civilian secretariat as Department of Police, what it means, currently, the minister, it's within the South African Police Service. The minister is not serviced by the civilian secretariat for police. And the white paper says, the civilian secretariat need to support the minister fully, and it must be the Department of Police. So it's not about changing the name. You are still the civilian secretariat for police service, but with full functioning that the minister has got the full service and the support and the advice, which means that when you reposition, it means that even in terms of how you do things, your process and your value chain need to be rethought, because we will be responsible, for instance, to process cabinet memos that come from any of those institutions. So it won't be that SAPS send a cab memo that we haven't seen. Everything has to come through the secretary to make sure that the cab memo, when it goes to cabinet, it is signed by the secretary for police, not the commissioner. It's a different process. So you actually do quality assurance in terms of what goes to cabinet, directly advising the minister. It's a different role. So that's the repositioning that we're talking about. And also it will mean that how we work as a team is different. The issue of the judge, the inspecting judge of the DPCI, the judge is not paid by us. The judge is paid by the justice. So we can't put it there as a vacancy because it's not our vacancy. When they fill it, they will reflect it on their structure, say they've got this retired judge who they are paying. So it's not a vacancy on our side. So you cannot count the judge as an employee because the judge is not, it's in a different, what do you call it, a different arm of the state. The use of force policy, what we are saying is we have developed the use of force policy to clarify those issues. When are you allowed to use force? Under what circumstances, and to avoid issues of abusing of force. The use of force policy will also assist us. Some of the claims that we are getting, which is making this litigation fees so high, the contingent liability that I spoke about of 4.7 billion, it's because police only think that every time they want to get a statement, they must actually just do some clapping a bit, then they get that. So that policy to actually assist them in making sure that that is not happening. And it will even in terms of the TRT and those highly trained police, the public order policing, that at what point and how should they use force? It clarifies those things. And this policy, we submitted it to Minister, and he referred it to the panel of experts. And in their last meeting, they had a UN specialist who deals with these issues of use of force, actually analyzing that policy. So it's going to address all the issues and the confusion that is there, so that when the minister is making a statement, the statement that talks about the policy that is there. The issue about the silencing of the guns, we're talking about, if we have amnesties, for instance, we came to table that we need is part of silencing the guns, because if you have an amnesty and you take out illegal firearms from the people, you have less guns out there that are making noise and killing people. But we find one of the issues that we said needs to happen, it's those arms that we find in police stations that we found that it was delivered 2010 with the amnesty, but it's still in the police station. They could be ending up in the criminals if they haven't gone to the criminals already. So we're saying if we have an amnesty, it must be implemented immediately, because you have this problem that people will use the guns that you have collected to commit crimes. The issue of vetting, I will ask Mr. Mashibini to deal with that, but at the senior management level that has been done, but it's the lower level stuff that needs to be done, but Mr. Mashivini will address that. And the issue about the targets on the implementation of the white paper, Ms. Omar will deal with that. And the issue about increases in budgets, the CFO will deal with that. The issue about the employee health and wellness at cluster level, this is a target not for us. It's SAPS that needs to implement that. What we will do is we have to monitor that it's happening. That's why I indicated when I presented that with these priorities, we will have to adjust our APP if it's necessary. SAPS will also have to look into the APP if this priority means that they have to change, they need to do that. We will do an oversight whether that is happening or not. We currently have some public-private partnership work that we do. For instance, with the advice of the committee, the Business Against Crime is actually assisting us in improving our financial management, where we approached them and they agreed. They have sent their executive finance and the CEO, including another specialist that is working with the CFO to actually address our finances. So it's one of those public-private partnerships. We also have a partnership with GIZ on the issue of safer spaces. And also, they are assisting us in the development of the implementation plan for the white paper on safety and security. So we have those, but the issue is, as you are rightfully saying, we should actually indicate who are we going to partnership with, which is something that Minister also raised that fact to say. That's why he highlighted it as a priority, that we can't just come and say, partnerships, who are you partnering with, who are you going to enter into MOU with. The issue
issue about the filling of SMS vacancies, we have got very few SMS vacancies. Most of our SMS vacancies have been filled. The challenge now is to say, and this is in our employment equity plan that we submitted to the Department of Labor, we are saying preference from now on will be given to women for appointment at SMS level so that we meet the target of 50%. And also in our employment equity plan that we submitted, we also put in targets and also how we are going to work with the institutions that deal with people with disabilities. When we have vacancies, that we will send it to them to say that we are advertising, let's work together to make sure that we have people coming in. But the issue of the office, we are still in Van Erkom, which is linked to Vachtdays. It's not a very good place to work. We are overcrowded there. But this process is with Public Works. We are dealing with them. Just sometimes you think you have walked a mile and all of a sudden they turn you back. Last week now they were telling me, you must consider going to Telkom Towers. And I said, but we have identified the building, which you said arts and culture cannot fill that building. They can only fill 10 floors, and we can have the rest of those floors to us. Because for us, we are at a desperate stage. We can't even buy a server, an IT server, because we don't have a place where you can put it. It needs a certain kind of temperature, and you have to build it in such a way that... So we have that challenge. It's an issue that we raised with Minister when he came in, and we are finalizing. I don't know if Mr. Mashibini will have more updates in terms of how far we are with that. Colleagues will deal with the outstanding question.
Thank you, Secretary. Honourable Member, the white paper indicator is removed from the APP because it was adopted last year, but it's very much on our agenda. It's in our operational plans. We have started the implementation plans on both the white papers. So the white paper on safety and security, we have a 200-page implementation plan just for national government departments. For this year, we're working on the provincial and local government departments' role in terms of implementing the white paper on safety. The white paper on policing, we've got GTEC, Government Technical Advisory Services, to assist us with the implementation, because there's two parts to the implementation plan on the white paper on policing. It's the one that focuses specifically on SAPs and how they're going to implement, and the other one is on the business case way of the secretariat, because there's implications for the secretariat as well, in terms of how we're going to go forward moving our structure and new functions that the Secretary spoke about. So, for example, Minister's CAB memos and then international relations. So it's very much on the agenda. It hasn't been moved up. And then, Chair, to answer your question about the lag. The lag in the amendment to the SAPS Act was because the white paper wasn't adopted. It has been adopted. It's a year now. So because we're working on the implementation plan, I suppose we need to work concurrently. I'm not sure. So... But it's very much on the agenda. It hasn't been. And just on the use of force policy, the Secretary answered it. I just want to say, I think maybe the word is misleading, use of force. It doesn't imply using more force. It implies using minimum force. And it articulates a very human rights compliant approach. So we're pushing the human rights compliance issues in the use of force policy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. The Secretary has answered most of the questions, but I think the one that still needs to be answered is around the vetting of members. Now, as honorable members can recall, the reason why all our SMS members today have been vetted, it was after your intervention, when we have reported to you and then you called them here, and then immediately after that they went to commit themselves. We have submitted all the applications of non-SMS members. We have been following up. The only answer that we have been getting is we are understaffed. We can't be able to help you. Sorry. You'll have to wait. We are busy with other priorities and so on. So we have done our work. We have done everything in our power, but unfortunately we can't get any joy from South African State Security Agency. With regard to the issue of the building, yes, it is true what Secretary has said, that we are in the process of moving out and relocating to the new building. The new building has been identified. Department of Arts and Culture has agreed to share that building with us. We had a meeting already last week with them where they gave us the floor plans, in which floor plans we had to partition all the offices that we'll need. The agreement is by the end of June, we should have left the building. So we have agreed with them that by the end of June, we want definitely to move out of that building. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. On the issues of increases and maybe declines and increases, I must indicate to the House that most of these numbers that are here are numbers that were originally sent by the different program managers. But as the Budget Committee, we're still going back to go and review this allocation. But then what happens here is that the savings that we hope the savings that we are hoping to make out of this. Most of them, you realize that because finance was the last one to allocate the funds to themselves, so you realize that the audit fees are very low. So some of this money, some of the savings that we're going to make based on the cost containment is going to cover for the audit fees because they are relatively very low allocated. But there's also issues relating to staff development and training, which funds need to be allocated to. So the savings that we are hoping to make, wherever we intend to make, will mainly be going to those two items. But in terms of venues and facilities, as much as we had planned for less than just about 300,000, but the actual expenditure as at the end of the year for the current financial year, it was 1 million. But if you compare the 1 million from the 15-16 financial year, where we spent about 3.2 million for venues and facilities, and you are saying that this year we spend about 1 million, and now we've budgeted for about 650. So that is how. It's not necessarily increased, because if you look at the actual expenditure, it's about 1 million. Then on issues relating to contractors, which could be maybe interpreted as consultants, those are mainly for events management, and this work relates mainly to the work that is done by partnership. And FAS indicated that most of these figures, they come from the programs themselves, and this program foresees itself to going to be engaged in a lot of community outreach programs. So that amount that seems to be increasing, it relates to those events management issues. And the actual consultants themselves, you'll note that during the audited financial year, which is 15-16, we spent about 1.9 million for the consultants that year. And this year, we spend about 1 million. And next year, we are hoping to go lower than 1 million. So that will be some kind of an improvement in terms of the consultants. The one that we're looking at, it could have been the one that relates to events management as they relate to partnership. The other matter where we're hoping to also save a lot of money is on issues of advertising. You realize that maybe during the audited financial year, which is 15-16, we spend about 3.5 million on matters relating to advertising. And then this year we spend about a million, and now we are planning to make sure that we have less than half a million allocated to that item. So that is where we're hoping to get savings, and those are the purposes for which we hope to get those savings. Thank you.
I just want to make a correction on the issue of consultants. It could even be more, because the thinness of legislation, if we need to reprioritize, it might mean that I will need to get legal drafters outside to assist the team. So I just want to correct that, so that when I report, you don't say, you said you're cutting, but now it's up. So just to clarify that.
Yes, colleagues, we will go through the second round in terms of questions to the police secretariat. I've got a couple from my side. Just in terms of the One priority that the minister set out is the issue of e-policing and also the issue of digital policing. So that's a fundamental important field. And again, in the past, and ICT as well, SAPS do huge procurements over multi-years. In the end, a lot of the systems are not implemented. There's various problems. I don't want to go into the detail. I think a lot of the systems, you are aware of the issues. But it's also got to do maybe with the governance of that. And maybe to look at other jurisdictions, the issue of a digital policing board and also the issue of a police ICT company that can look at these things independently. Because the dilemma is going forward, technology in e-policing is going to become the ultimate tool because there's not going to be enough money for more staff or personnel. So, but it's important that there should be governance and also analysis of that field. And I believe it's important that the Secretariat should play that role. Like the Minister indicated, it's a priority for them. So from our side, we will support it, and it will be important if the Secretariat can look at that issue going forward. That's quite important. Then just the issue of the police CPFs, because that's an example. How do we improve community police relations, the CPFs? We can't do that until we change the SAPS Act and until it comes and resides with you, as the white paper indicates. So if we say, no, we're not going to do the SAPS Act, means 2-year delay in ensuring that we jack up that environment. So I think there's more reasons to say the SAPS Act is urgent, because it will deal with that issue. Because if the involvement of in the community is not improved, we're not going to deal with crime effectively. And the issue that was raised of financing of the CPFs, that's the big issue, and the effective functioning of them. So I think the work that you're doing in that regard, we support that, and that is the way to go. Right, let's go on Bele.
Thank you, Chair. So there was mention of how the provisioning in the budget has been expanded to accommodate the fact that functions like the DNA board and the DPCI judge are also now on the Secretariat's plate. But a concern that the committee had last year was around the, for lack of a better term, having some sort of ring fencing for the DNA board to ensure that it was properly resourced to carry out its mandate. So I just want to find out what is the measure in place, if not full on ring fencing, but just to secure, demarcate, and ensure that intention is fulfilled for the DNA board to have what it needs to do its work, and not, as seemed to be the case last year, became or had its resources poached to meet spontaneous ministerial requirements. And then can I just check, because I didn't see it mentioned explicitly, is the Firearm Appeals Board still on the Secretariat? No, it's not. Okay. No, then, yeah, I think that's all I had for now, Chair.
Billy? Or Muslongo?
No, Chair, I don't have any at the moment, but I would still like to caution Chairperson on that thing of a force. I understand what the Secretariat is raising in consultation even with some foreign but I think we will need some kind of a debate on this, because Europe and other countries are at war at the moment. And I don't know whether when we are going to follow them, because at the end of the day, we are declaring war against our people. I think we would need definitely to be very, 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 very careful, no matter how good. At times, Babu Kwala used to say, the road to hell is paved with very good, nice stones, but finally it is leading you to hell. I haven't still forgotten that. I have seen the implication of these things.
We will have that debate. Honourable Member, Honourable Ramatakar.
Just a quick follow-up, Chair. If we were to, and I hear this point about that there is a business plan that detail the implementation of the white paper. It's somewhere, not necessarily on the APP, but it's in a working document. Do we have access to that document? That's a working document. We judge you on a basis of what is called APP and the target indicators that we would be able to look at. So we're not going to be able to look at that because it's not part of what. That's just a concern, just to respond to your question. And on your point, this whole school safety program, the protocol and monitoring of it, there seems not to be indicators that attached to that. Is it because we're saying it's an education matter, not necessarily your matter? And how are you going to be able to measure that they're actually doing what they're supposed to do? That's one. Two, Chair, if we accelerate, including the bills that we now have a quicker turnaround, is your budget sufficient around that issue? For an example, if we were to go to advertise in the bill, the one that has been agreed to, and you're reducing the budget around the advertising, would you be able to find another money elsewhere to address that particular question? Or are you still going to still have to readjust your budget accordingly to address that particular need? Because you're going to come back basically and say, this is what we're going to do. This debate, single police service, yeah, it's, I see you have here that there's a policy or discussion document that is coming up. You know, Chair, with respect, the debate about the single policy has been coming on for a long time. It's some exhausted discussion. I don't know what's the fear of it, because in the Constitution is very clear. There will be one police force, I think it's Section 199 or something like that, 99.2. There will be one police officers, but there will be other local police focusing in the local area, which is then become municipal police. Now, I don't know, the Chair, what are the problems, what the Secretaries find as a problem to implementing. I know there's been some noises, some municipalities to say this is our force, but they don't have the authority in terms of the Constitution. The Constitution is very clear about it in terms of command and control, how you do this. It's a matter of where the other people are deployed. So when you're dealing with the SAPS Act, obviously we've got to make expression around this. So if you're going to bring down forward the time frame of SAPS Act and the debate according to your perhaps the standard you're going to set is not sufficiently taking place in the country. So you're going to exclude that because obviously the policy issues that the discussion document has not necessarily found. Somehow we trip ourselves with some of the things that we're creating. Isn't it better consultation that goes through the Act in terms of public consultation? We're following the Constitution. These are the provision of the Constitution. We will have one police force in the country. Others are going to be, in terms of the Constitution, designed in this particular way by way of municipal police, Cape Town, Nelson Mandela, and they are going to function this way. Command and control as a police officer will happen this way. Then people consulted in that basis. And then you short-circuit this long debate that you're going to have. I just think that for me, as long as I can remember this discussion, it's a fairly long state discussion. The last point, I just want to hear your point, Chair. The budget review committee that you have, I don't know whether the head director was already beginning to suggest that the PAC is part of that, or what. Maybe you can just tell us what is the composition of that budget committee. Is it one that includes the PAC, or PAC is a kind of ad hoc arrangement that that comes now and then to that debate? I have the national board, but I think I leave that because you already asked a question about the CPF.
Thank you very much, Honourable Abidja. You covered, Honourable Gula.
Thank you, Chairperson. I didn't hear my question answered about the stability. And my first question now, as a designated department, do you have a long-term infrastructure and capital asset plan? My second question, you said SARS not comply on a DVA. What are you going to do? Are you going to leave the SARS not complying, or what are your plans? Thank you, Chairperson.
And then Honourable Molibatsi, you covered. Right. I just want to get an indication, is there any other questions from members, because I'm going to close now the book. The book of questions. I want to close that because I want to conclude this one before tea. After tea, we continue with iPad. Maybe just one question from my side. I mean, it's vital that we, in terms of financial management, you know, improve. I just want to know, is the Treasury Assistance Group still involved with the department? And then, Secretary, I don't want to put you on the spot, but the audit opinion, can we expect a major improvement this year? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The issue regarding the SAPS Act, I think it's an emphasis. We have taken the members' concern about prioritization. And also it's linked to the question that Honorable Ramadlakane has raised, that the issue about the single police service, you cannot address it without addressing the amendments to the SAPS Act. And the position paper that we are talking about, it talks about addressing Section 64L of the South African Police Service Act, and also coming out with the regulations. That in itself, you'll find that you address the issues of the single police service. Although there's debates that others are saying it's incorporation of all the police at all levels into one single force, which contradicts the Constitution. So we are putting those issues in. And in terms of priority, how we factor in the presentation, that's why we are saying we need to finalize this discourse, and we have a common agreement to say, are we going to address all the issues regarding the single police service through the amendment of the SAPS Act? Can it be accommodated there? Or do we need a separate legislation that will deal with that? Those are the issues that we have put in the discussion document, and we also have this roadmap that says this is how we can move forward. So if we have that consensus, then we'll be able to deal with those issues. And we cannot avoid the amendment of the Subs Act as a priority. The issue about the ring fencing, Honorable Mbele, the ring fencing of the budget for the DNA board and the DPCI judge, it's not our call. And I've indicated that it's there, it's available, but there are processes that must be done. It's the call of the Minister of Finance, National Treasury, to say, do I ring fence? There are challenges when you find that the capacity to spend, it's not there, and this money has been ring fenced and it doesn't get utilized. And you have stifled other programs because you are having this program, and every year you will keep on rolling over those funds, or they will go back to finance. So they make those decisions. We can't make that decision. If finance says ring fence this money, it will be ring fenced. I don't have to come and account for ring fenced money to Parliament. Because it's not me. The person who must account for that money is the one who that money has been ring-fenced for. We don't have any problem with that. But it's the call that National Treasury must make. And I will make sure that when we go to the budgets, that I will take some of the, because we have appointed now the director responsible for DNA board. That person must go to finance and also support that process if they want finance to deal with that. It can't be me doing that work for them. It's their responsibility. They need to do that. But the call is a National Treasury's call. We have heard the issue about the use of force policy. We can actually send it to the members through the advisor. So that members can look into that. But the issue is it's still being considered by the panel of experts, but it's a document that you can look into it, and if it needs to be enhanced, we can do that. We can send it through to the portfolio committee. The issue of stability, I think at the top management level, I indicated that we have stabilized the department, and stabilization doesn't mean, as I've indicated, that in some areas we have identified that we are very thin. Stability in terms of people living at senior management, all the positions of chief directors have been filled, including the position of the secretary, and there are very few positions at SMS that we need to fill. So I can say the stability is there, but now we have to strengthen those areas that we are weak. The Treasury Assistance Group, I just want to check. We had the GTEC assisting us, and in terms of the Accountant General, he said he cannot send people to the department. If we need assistance, we check with them, and then they will address us. They don't have the capacity to can actually send to the department. But we are still working with the government technical assistance team that is assisting us with the white papers. They are part of the National Treasury. And I also indicated that we are being assisted by Business Against Crime in terms of improving our finances.
The issue about the compliance of subs with DVA, I will leave that to Mr. Ramaru to address. The advertising of bills, I think I would stand for correction with the CFO, but we have the budget for that when we have to advertise public comments and so on. It won't be affected by the reduction. What we are looking at, there are things like you have this promotion materials and all those things that we want to reduce those kind of things and unnecessary advertising. The issue of the school safety program, it's an MTSF target. The indicators that we have is about the reports that we produce every year, and also the percentage of police stations that are actually implementing that school safety program. So they are targets and indicators regarding that. But there's a lot of room for improvement in terms of our intersectoral coordination and strategic partnership unit to do proper work on that area. Okay, if I have left other things, you will. Yeah, I can address that. Oh, the audit outcome, the CFO doesn't want to bite the bullet. As I indicated the last time we were here, is what we are doing is the things that we shouldn't be qualified on because of a capacity issue or somebody that didn't do their work shouldn't happen. There are historical issues, like now we have taken money which we paid for the lawyers regarding the IP matter. We don't know how the auditors are going to take that, whether it's going to be treated as unauthorized expenditure or what. It's an issue that we are engaging with the, and once it's identified as unauthorized expenditure, it's an automatic qualification. But we have looked into our legislation, and we believe that we still can motivate why we had to pay for it. But it's a big lesson that we have learned, that in future we are not just going to jump and take over things that has nothing to do with us.
Maybe to be just specific on some items from which we are hoping to make some savings, which the budget committee was just it. But the budget committee that I'm speaking about is a budget committee made up of the program managers from the department and not BAC. So there are items like your catering and communication is items that we're still going to review to make sure that whatever savings that we make there, then they can go to whatever that become reprioritized. So those are the items. Again, in terms of issues relating to maybe ring fencing or whatever of the TBCI judge and DNA and ethics boss money, what you've also put in place is we've requested them to give us a detailed demand management plan, which will run from throughout the year. So that demand management plan will be closely monitored to make sure that whatever that they've planned to achieve is actually achieved based on the allocation that they've been given. But also, if there are possible savings that they might make, we'll really realize them on time, and we would have agreed with them that there was no way that money was going to be used. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Just to say that I note your point on the e-policing policy and the CPF. And then, Secretary, we need to send our ops plan to the committee as well on the white papers. And then the use of force policy as well. We'll welcome debated.
Oh, that is one on DVA. Yes. Okay. Yeah, the question was, what are we doing or are we leaving that to subs? We're actually not leaving that to subs. We have revived what we call the compliance forums, where we sit with the social crime unit from subs, where we discuss all these findings that we get when we do the oversight visits. So we are in the process of also reviewing, rather reviving the same structures at provincial level, so that whenever we have these findings, they are able to discuss between the provincial secretariat and SAPS, and be able now to deal with the recommendations that we are giving. So that is over and above the study that we will be doing this financial year, where we're saying, apart from addressing them as they happen, but what is the root cause of this non-compliance, so that we don't just deal maybe with the products, but we deal with the root itself, because if we don't address the real cause, then this problem might just continue happening. Thank you.
Right, thank you very much to the Secretary and his team for the interaction. We take note of all the responses. We will accordingly deal with our recommendations next week. If there's any additional information you want to make to us available to assist us, you are welcome. And otherwise, we will see you at the budget debate on the 23rd. Members, we're going to break for 10 minutes for tea, coffee, and then we will come back with IPED. Thank you. Once again, welcome to the honourable members. Welcome to the Executive Director of IPED, Mr. Robert McBride, and his team. This will be the last item for today and the last engagement in terms of budgets 2017-18, so I know the members are very happy. I'm first going to give an opportunity to the members to introduce themselves, and then we'll ask the Executive Director to introduce his delegation. Thank you.
Melam bagaitso lena la ka kenna NG mo lebatse ke le lokola committee e ke a leboga
ndiri ku wa mshimbidza mshuma dzina langa ndi mapeche a leboga ndi member wa e committee.
Good afternoon, Leonard Ramatagan is my name, a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Zakele Mbele, member of the committee.
Members, Mr. McBride.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. On my right-hand side is Antoinette Mpaho, Director Executive Support. On my left is the CFO, Lindu Goodling Mongo. On her left is Mr. Matthew Sasoko, the Head of Investigations and Information Management. And on his left is Mamodishe Mulope, who is the Head of Stakeholder Management and Compliance Monitoring. And on her left is our Program Manager for One, Ma'am Nomkosi Netsianda, and on her left is the Head of Legal, Marianne Murwasi, and on her left is the Acting Director for Strategy, Susan Letlape.
Man behind you.
I always forget Mr. Dlamini, but he sits behind. Mr. Moses Dlamini, National Spokesperson, and on the left behind me is Dr. Chris Mokobatiti. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Mr. McBride. Let's continue and let's get the briefing. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. It's just in terms of the index of our presentation is for the sake of consistency and uniformity, we'll just cover the presentation, the content of the presentation that was done to the minister on the 18th, so you can see the themes and the same messages coming through, and then we'll deal with the IPED budget allocations for years 2017 and 18, and then the IPED annual performance plan, and then I'll tie in with the conclusion. I will deal with the first and second parts, half of the second part, and then CFO will take over after that. So just in terms of the presentation to the minister, on the 18th, on him being appointed, we dealt with the impact of the Constitutional Court judgments and the consequential amendment of the Act and the time frames. We dealt with the Falun Commission recommendations so that he's sensitized to what the issues are. We dealt with the ACSA, the Auditor General of South Africa's recommendations, which are, in effect, the Constitutional Court judgment, Falun and ACSA touch the same things about structural and operational independence. On the budget issues, the presentation to the ministers that we start 17-18 with the 18 million rand accrual the cause of which we covered in previous presentations, including objective factors as to why there's basically 18 million rand hole in the budget. Then the IPED building, which we did not address as fully as we should have with the minister, but the truth of the matter is we don't have a building. There's an invalid lease according to the High Court. And in fairness, DPW is not addressing this matter with the urgency that is required. And then we also covered the high-level investigations. And then we also mentioned the issue of tabling of annual performance plan to the minister. In essence, dealing with the budget, and I'll deal with slides 4, 5, and 6 together, in essence. So since the inception of IPED, there's basically been an absolute increase of budget allocation of about 29%, so roughly averaging about 5.8% per annum. So the growth has been really insignificant, and if you look at budget allocations for the MTF period, over 3 years, it looks good, like 11%, but it's actually an average of 4.3% per annum. And basically what this is able to cover is only your contractual obligations and escalation, which are between 5 and 10%, and your annual wage increment, which is 7%. So the budgetary allocations for IPED basically are less than the projected consumer price index figures. So it's so we are not going to be able to stay afloat for any sustainable effectiveness. At the moment, if you analyze our core functions as a ratio to support functions, it's 70-30. We of the opinion that the ideal ratio should be about 60-40 to give proper support to the core function. Just on slide 8, just to mention that if you'll see there is program 1, there's program 2, and there's no program 3. Treasury unilaterally removed program 3, and they were, again in fairness, insensitive to the importance of IPED having a legal section in line with the Act as it now stands. And no amount of persuasion or explanation of the gravitas of the work that we do and the fact that we are litigation-intensive department. It appears our appeals fell on deaf ears, and perhaps the level of the person dealing with us is not at an appropriate level. So that's the issue. We're going to continue to engage with them to reinstate Program 3, which is legal and litigation services. Most of March and April we've been caught up with in senior management with litigation issues and how they could come to a conclusion that we don't require a legal section. It amazes me. I will now hand over to CFO to continue the rest of the presentation on the budget.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Just to take you through the details now of the budgetary slides, based on the overview that you've received from the Executive Director. If you look to slide 4, there we've tried to project what has been the historic growth of the IPED over the past 4 years and what is going to be the growth going forward. The movement between 12-13 and 13-14 shows you a growth of about 9.65%, and as well as between 13-14 and 14-15, there's a growth of 8.15% in the budget allocation of the IPED. And this was during the first few financial years of the implementation of the IPED Act, which meant that that growth was slightly above inflation to account for minimal growth in line with the new mandates that came into about with the implementation of the IPED Act.
But that growth, as you see in 13-14, it started to then grow at a declining rate, because the first year you grow at 9.65%, the second year you then grow at 8.15%, which starts then to put pressure on the ability of the IPED to grow in terms of the IPED Act implementation plan, which was planned to be implemented over a five-year period. In 14-15, between 14-15 and 15-16, you would note there that the budget grew from 234.7 million to 234.8 million, which in real terms is no real growth. It's a growth rate of 0.04% in the budget baseline, which meant that basically your normal contractual escalation rates, your normal wage settlement agreement escalation rates were not funded, particularly in that year of implementation. And this is all happening in the context where the IPED spent 99% of its budget in 14-15, 99.7% of its budget in 15-16, and for 16-17, 99.97% of its budget allocation. So despite the efforts that IPED has made in trying to demonstrate its ability to spend the funds that are appropriated to it appropriately, there still seems to be an increasing pressure on the budget baseline of this department to be able to sustain current operations. Going forward over the MTF period, then you would note that then the budget grows from 255.5 million in 17-18 to 285.8 million in 2019-20. And on slide 5, what we've tried to highlight there is exactly the picture that was depicted on slide 4. So say, as much as the budget has grown in absolute terms, if you compare 197 million to 255 million, it's grown by 29% over 4 years. The actual year-on-year growth, as the executive director has alluded, is on average 5.8% per year, which is below inflationary increases. In the beginning, there seemed to be some significant growth, but in that third year, when there was no real growth in the budget, it then dropped the average growth rate down to below inflation. Going forward, the budget is going to grow from 255.5 million to 285.8 million, which in absolute terms, if you compare the 2 years, is 11%, but the year-on-year growth is around 4.3% annual growth per annum, which is further reduced in terms of your escalated inflationary rates that you would expect. So this increase, this minimal increase in the budget of the IPED doesn't cover the ability of IPED to fully implement what was envisaged in terms of the IPED Act implementation plan, which was expected to roll out over 5 years, and continues to place pressure on the ability of the IPED to service its current existing contractual obligations, as well as its current increasing wage escalations, which are negotiated at a general government forum. If you look at slide 6 there, between 2017-18 and 2016-17, the budget of the IPED grows by 9.4 million rand, which translates to a growth rate of 3.7%. Again, to emphasize, this is way below the current existing contractual obligations, which escalation clauses range from escalations of 5% to 10%, and the wage increments, which range on average to 7%. Which means that if we continue to experience these very minimal adjustments in the budget baselines of the IPED, the current operational ability of the IPED will continue to be squeezed to a point where it may start to have severe impacts on current deliverables that management needs to deliver on. If this percentage had, for example, increased just at pure basic inflation, that meant that this budget for 17-18 should have at least increased by 15 million rand. Add to that the year-on-year pressures that the department has experienced in terms of accruals, which have had to be carried forward because the department could not afford to be in contravention with the PFMA and allow the department to overspend.
you then add the 18 million accruals that the executive director has spoken to, that meant that the budget baseline of the IPA, just to allow it to operate as it currently is, should have increased in the regions of between 33 to 40 million just in that 1 year, compared to what was actually the increase of 9.4 million. So that's just to give an understanding that the year-on-year increases over the MTF period are far less than your projected CPI rates, the current existing contractual escalation rates, as well as the wage escalation rates that the department is expected to serve. The next slide just tries to give then an indication of how the budget appropriation has been appropriated amongst the areas of economic classification. As usual, in order to sustain the operations of the IPED in the light of the tightening fiscal constraints faced by the department, a bulk of this allocation is set in compensation of employees, because investigations by nature are very labor intensive and we are still trying to focus on that core area of delivering on the mandate of investigating in line with the IPED Act. Goods and services is then highly impacted, as well as the other areas of economic classification, as a result of trying to at least focus on investigations and delivering on those, in that your goods and services year-on-year growth continues to be below inflation and below the contractual obligation escalation rate. And another area which is of concern to management is the minimal ability of IPED to then budget for capital infrastructure, the renewing of critical ICT infrastructure, the provisioning of investment tools to investigators, because we are then left with very few money that we can afford to allocate to the area of capital assets or machinery and equipment, as is evidenced there over the next financial years. For 17-18, we're only able to appropriate 202,000 rand in terms of replenishing our infrastructure and equipment. Per program, I think the ED had indicated there in terms of the misalignment between the approved budget program structure and our operational programs as we currently operate, that we are currently in engagements with National Treasury to resuscitate legal services as a program, as we believe that legal services is a core enabling program which meets the definitions as described in the budget program structure guidelines, as it plays a critical role in our investigations as well as delivering on our core service delivery mandate. So those engagements are forthcoming with Treasury, and we are expecting that it will be corrected during the 2018 MTEF process. But looking at the current allocation per the programs as reflected in the ENE, we continue to focus the bulk of our baseline on investigation and information management program, which is with the program that houses our provinces, it houses the bulk of our investigators, so that we can still focus our attentions in light of the fiscal constraints to our core service delivery areas, program to investigation and information management. The next slide then depicts the allocation per program, per economic classification, just to get an understanding there. For example, in Program 1, the allocations per economic classification there, in investigation, the allocations per economic classification there. And then, again, most of the allocations are residing within our compensation of employees, economic classification, which then sustains our current staffing ability, and then goods and services is currently accommodating our essential contractual obligations that management has had to retain in light of the current budgetary constraints. But one very critical area of concern is the area of capital assets, where you can see, even in our core program, going forward, we're not able to appropriate any funds in the area of capital assets and investigative tools. Compliance monitoring and stakeholder management is also outlined in the next presentation, which also has the same drive in terms of what drives the allocations per economic classification. All right. In light of the budgetary constraints, the minimal growth in the budget, the good question then would be, what has IPED been able to prioritize within the baseline allocation that we have received in the current financial year? So if you look in our baseline assessment, you would notice that we've continued to prioritize the allocation in line with government priorities as expressed in the National Development Plan. So when you've got little money to do everything you need to do, you need to then focus yourself on what should be your key priorities. And one of the guidance that guides, as I say, were government priorities outlined in your National Development Plan, your MTSF framework, so that we can focus to deliver on the outcomes that government wants to achieve on. So one of the things that we did there is we then did introspection of our spending areas, where we could afford to sacrifice as a department so that we could relocate funds away from your non-core activities to the core activities so that the directorate could try to achieve more with the little resources that we had. Investigation capacity was continues to be prioritized within the baseline for continuity in the investigation of our reported cases. However, the continued constraint on the baseline of the IPED is starting to place extreme pressure on certain critical areas which affect our ability to operate. These include integrity strengthening and protection. You would be reminded that we had started the implementation of a very important unit, NSIT, over the MTSF financial year, and again, it was not a unit that was going to be established over one financial year. It was going to be phased in over 3 years. But even the implementation of that unit in terms of the growth that was expected over those 3 years is starting to be curtailed as a result of the ceilings that have been placed on our compensation of employees, not allowing us to grow at the rate that we had projected. Legal services and contract management is another area that is severely affected by continued pressure on the capacity of those units to function. You were reminded that when we established the program in line with implementation of the IPED Act, the first year of implementation of legal services saw the minimal capacitation of that unit, and the unit was expected to grow over 5 years. And as a result of the pressure that the department has experienced in the baseline, we've not been able to roll forward those plans in terms of fully fledging legal services to support the directorate, particularly when it comes to investigation advisory services that were foreseen in the Act. Service delivery, coverage, and accessibility continues to be extremely placed under pressure. Accounting, compliance, and reporting responsibilities are also experiencing pressure, where we are having less and less people to do and to comply with the stringent and increasing compliance requirements that we face as a National Department of Government, and also that we face in terms of ensuring that the IPED still continues to operate with good governance structures, even though the capacity of the directorate is being placed under pressure. Strategy and performance management is also extremely affected, as well as the ability of the IPED to effectively monitor the quality of recommendations that we are generating in our investigations. There have been activities that we could not accommodate within the tight baseline that we were faced with, and I think it's important to highlight those to members so that you know what to expect and what we were not able to fully accommodate within our baseline. These include the implementation of the IPED expansion strategy, which was a strategy to accommodate the demand that has been placed on the IPED for additional regional and district offices to improve accessibility as well as approve services on the ground. Another activity which we could not find in the baseline is the full implementation of the Marikana Commission report, as well as the recommendations there, particularly pertaining to the finalization of Scene 2, as light in the recommendations, but I know Program 2 will speak to that later in the presentation to give you details as to what have we been able to do and what we will not be able to accommodate in the baseline. The implementation of Section 23 of the IPED Act is another provision of legislation which we could not accommodate in the current baseline. The replacement of critical and worn-out information communication technology infrastructure and equipment
could not be accommodated sufficiently within the baseline, and this also has a direct impact on the ability of the department to fully implement its disaster recovery plan, particularly when it comes to issues of the backup sites and the tools and infrastructure that we are expected to maintain within those sites. The implementation of a security analysis report, which was conducted a few years ago, which dealt with the risks posed on security for all of our offices, we haven't been able to fully fund some of the recommendations that came out as a result of that due to the tight budget baseline that we had to work with. With respect to the staffing requirements that were accommodated in our baseline, initially the establishment of the IPED, which has been approved over the MTF period, had foreseen growth of our establishment from 418 to 423 personnel. But as a result of the introduction of the general compensation of employees ceilings, which was implemented over the department then had to reduce its foreseen existing capacity to be able to remain within the baseline, so that we don't put the department in a situation where it cannot afford the wage bill to which it is committed to. So that then saw the reduction of funded posts from the foreseen 423 posts to 388 posts, which is the current ceiling or the maximum that the department can go to be able to afford its wage bill within the budget allocation that has been afforded to the department. And this is all in the context of reductions that were placed on the IPED budget over the MTF period, which had an impact on the ability of IPED to increase its staffing capacity over the financial years. One must also remember how IPED's financial situation currently even dates back to its former predecessor, the Independent Complaints Directorate, which was also criticized in the past for lack of financial resources and lack of necessary capacity. In 1997, the Department of Public Service and Administration conducted a study which had determined that the ideal human capacity for the predecessor ICD should have been 535 posts. And even though the IPED directly investigates considerably more cases than its predecessor did, currently the revised human capacity has been reduced to a maximum of 388 posts, which is far below what was ever even envisaged for the ICD itself. And this really puts a considerable amount of pressure on the few human resources that the department has to deal with the heavy workload and responsibilities that have been placed on them as employees of the directorate. I think for now I would stop there in terms of understanding the budgetary issues that the IPED is facing, and I will then hand over to Mrs. Nityanda, the Program Manager of Program Manager 1, to then take you through what has been committed in terms of our annual performance plan, which is also aligned to the budget allocations that we've received. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, CFO. Ms. Nityanda, you're welcome.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Good afternoon. I'm going to take you through the purpose of Program 1, which is administration, as well as the planned activities for the current financial year 2017-18, as well as other issues that need to be raised in terms of what we needed to adjust in order to keep up with available limited resources that we are having as a department. The purpose of Administration Program 1 is to provide strategic leadership, management, and support services to the department. We are structured into five sub-programs, namely departmental management, internal audit, financial services, corporate services, and office accommodation. Departmental management consists of further four sub-units within the department management. Executive support is there to provide strategic support to the executive director. They also provide secretariat services as well as administrative and logistics services to make sure that the office of the executive director operates efficiently and effectively in order for the vision of the IPED to be implemented. We've got corporate governance. They are responsible for ethics and risk management. They also develop policies to mitigate the risk within IPID. They do risk assessment for the department and as well as recommend the mitigating strategies to make sure that we are within acceptable level of risk as the department. They also advise the management on risk profile of the IPID. Also have strategy and performance performance monitoring. They provide overall strategic planning of the IPID. They do monitoring and evaluation of the implementation of our APP as the organization. They are also responsible to ensure that we do comply with our reporting responsibility as the department. They also ensure that our APP and the strategic planning strategic plans are tabled on time and we are within those frameworks that we cannot omit to meet. We also have security management. They are there to ensure that we comply with minimum information security standards as well as minimum physical security standards as the department as prescribed by SSA. They do access control. They do evaluate, like CFO has indicated that they did the inspection, and they do advise management on what to do to improve our security, physical security as well as information security. We've got internal audit. They conduct a risk-based audit for the department. They provide assurance to the management on how well are we as the organization in terms of our controls and systems. They also do the assessment of the control environment as well as they act as the management support so that the management can be able to intervene where intervention is required. We've got financial services. Under financial services, we've got the Office of the CFO, who is providing strategic financial support to the accounting officer as well as the whole IPID. She's also ensuring that we budget in line with IPID's strategy and we do not deviate and within the limited resources that we are having. She also ensures that we are having internal controls and systems in place in order to ensure sound financial management in the department. We've got also financial services who deal with our budget management. They also check our ensure that our cash flow is in line with the strategy of the department and activities that are planned. They also ensure that the department does financial reporting that is required. They also provide accounting services for the department. Then we've got supply chain and asset management subunit. They do the demand and supply management, asset management, and procurement of services and goods for the department. Then we've got corporate services. Basically, it's the support services for the IPID to make sure that we are operating effectively and efficiently. We've got human resource management and development. They deal with the recruitment, selection, and total conditions of services for the department. Then we've got human resource development, making sure that we comply with Skills Development Act, and we conduct our skills audit as well as our skills development plan for the department and other developmental workshops and and training courses are being arranged by this component. So they are there to make sure that we are fully capacitated in terms of knowledge and skills that is required for us to do our job within IPID. Then we've got labor relations services. They deal with all labor relations matters, including your grievances and misconduct cases. They also provide, prepare the policies and conduct the workshops for awareness workshop for our officials so that we minimize misconduct cases as well as grievances, because we believe that when our officials are aware and our supervisors and managers are aware of what is expected of them, we will have lesser and lesser grievances as well as misconduct cases. Then we've got Human Resource Planning Unit. They deal with our structures to make sure that our structure is aligned to our mandate as well as our strategy as the department. We also have information and communication technology. Their role is to develop and implement ICT strategy for the department, which is aligned to the IPID strategy. They must also ensure that we've got system security, and they also do the monitoring. What the CFO was talking about, that currently we do not have a disaster recovery plan for the department. What we have is bare minimal. We're utilizing old assets that we need to test from time to time to make sure that it will be able to assist us should a crisis arise. They also do the infrastructure support as well as help desk services. Then we've got the vetting services. They assist us to fast track, because in line with the IPID Act, we must make sure that our officials, before they are accepted within the IPID, they go through the pre-employment screening at least before we bring them on board, as well as service providers. So they do information gathering and analysis and advice management accordingly, so that we are able to take informed decision on whether to appoint or not to appoint our officials or the service providers. They also facilitate the issue of security clearance with SSA. And then we've got office accommodation. And the office accommodation is where the devoted funds from DPW reside, but it's under the control of auxiliary services. And then we've got auxiliary services that is responsible for the cleaning services for our building, telephone services, transport and fleet services, records management and messenger services. I'll take you through our strategic objectives, indicators and targets for the MTEF period. A strategic objective is a capable workforce. Indicator is the number of strategic training areas undertaken as per IPID training plan. For the whole MTEF period, we have targeted 21, splitting into 7 per financial year across the MTEF period. Unfortunately, due to financial constraints, we can't we cannot conduct a number of training programs that are identified as per personal development plan because the allocated budget is so minimal. We are only doing those that are compulsory that we cannot do without. So 7 programs, that's all we can afford across the MTEF period. We are also committed to ensure that the vacancy rate is kept below 10% across MTEF period. The percentage of implementation of internal audit action plans. Here we are saying even though we get unqualified audit opinion, but we do get few findings. So we want to ensure that all those are eliminated. Our vision is to get the clean audit one day. So we're planning to do 100% implementation of those plans the implementation across the MTAF period. And then number of reports on risk maturity level produced. We will be producing four per financial year, four reports per financial year. Here what we are doing, there is a software that is used to check if we've got policies and check if we've got systems to ensure that we minimize the risk as the organization, and we've got basic measures to ensure that the risks are eliminated, and also how tight our security on our systems and so on. So currently we are sitting at 3.5 out of 5. We are hoping to reach 5 out of 5 should we have enough budget. So we will be producing the reports that will inform management where are we sitting as a department in terms of our compliance and corporate governance issues, good governance issues. A number of performance reports on implementation of APP submitted to National Treasury and DPME within stipulated time frames. This we cannot do without its mandatory. We will be producing those reports. The next slide indicates the adjustments that we did as on our APP. Some of the adjustment we did because of the budget that was not available for us to implement. Others we did because there were two operational to be on our APP after we were advised by the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation to remove them from our APP because they were too operational, and we put them on our individual operational plans. Others were not measurable. We had to adjust them so that we are able to measure them. Thank you.
Thank you,
welcome. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I'll be taking you through Program 2, Investigation and Information Management. The purpose of this program is to coordinate and facilitate the directorate investigation processes through the development of policy and strategic frameworks that guide and report on investigation. The program will also enhance efficiency in case management and maintain relationship with other state security agencies such as the Southern Police Services, the National Prosecuting Authority, Civilian Secretariat for Police, and community stakeholders through ongoing national and provincial engagement forums. The program consists of the following sub-programs and components: investigation management, investigation services, and information management. The next slide, I will take you through the strategic objective indicators and targets. It is important, Chairperson, that as I go into the slide, I give you a background. As earlier alluded to by the CFO, the environment we're operating under in terms of the financial constraints we're facing as a department. So these indicators and targets were couched looking at the kind of situation we find ourselves in, and also looking at the previous year's performance in terms of what we have been able to achieve. But also we looked at the financial constraints as indicated by the CFO with regard to the personnel within the program, the posts that have been freezed as a result of cuts in budgets. So these targets have been against that background. I thought also I must indicate also that as indicated by CFO, that the expansion strategy has not been funded, so we could not expand as a result. So that also affects what goes into our indicators and targets. So too, the we've indicated the issue of the Marikana recommendation that was never funded, which meant that we had to redirect some of our baseline funding into that Marikana investigation to do the things that we could be able to do. But with regard to the other things like the SIN 2, as indicated at our last presentation, that there was no funding for that, so we could not do that. And in fact, as agreed with the National Director of Public Prosecution, the part that we've agreed that we'd do with them in terms of investigation, we've been able to conclude that on the 24th of April as agreed, but the one relating to SIN 2, which was not funded, has not been been done. There's an issue of the Section 23, where the department, since its IPED came into operation in 2012, have not been able to implement that Section 23. Mm. Labor unions have now taken us to court to force us to implement this Section 23. We'll, of course, await the outcome of those processes. It's important to note that every time we go to Treasury, these are the issues that we continuously raise when we ask for budget increase and adjustment, so that these are catered for. It's also important that I make the committee aware that the CFO indicated the accruals, and the ED indicated accruals of about 18 million. Now, the bulk of these accruals will come from Program 2. The result with that, as we start with this new financial year, already we start on a bad footing. Now, the strategic objectives for Program 2 is a specialized investigative capacity established, and the indicator there is the number of investigators trained on specialized services as per investigation training plan. And we plan to do 75 over the MTF. In each year of the MTF period. It is important to note also here that we had to reduce the number of trainings that we will be doing. Initially, when we look at the previous APP, we're looking at doing at least 100 training, so that has been reduced. Decision-ready cases completed. The indicator there is the percentage of decision-ready cases completed from the total received. We maintained 60% throughout the MTF period. The program performance indicators, percentage of cases registered and allocated within 72 hours of written notification. For 17-18, we put the percentage at 78, and it will grow to 80 and in 18-19 and 80 in 19-20. Number of fiscal report on investigation generated, it's 6 over the MTF period. Percentage of investigations of death in police custody that are decision ready, it's 62 over the MTF period. Percentage of investigation of death as a result of police action that are decision ready, it's 48 in the 17-18 financial year, and it will move up to 50 in 18-19 and 50 also in 19-20. Percentage of investigation of discharge of an official firearm by a police officer that are decision ready, we maintained at 60% over the MTF period. Percentage of investigations of rape by a police officer that are decision ready, we maintained as at 65% over the MTF period. Percentage of investigation of rape while in police custody, we maintained at 65% over the MTF period. Percentage investigation of torture that had seen ready. We maintained at 45% over the MTF period. Percentage of investigations of assault that had seen ready, we maintained at 51% over the MTF period. Percentage of investigation of corruption that had seen ready, we maintained at 40% over the MTF period. Percentage of investigations of other criminal and misconduct matters referred in terms of Section 28(1)(h) and 35(1)(b) of ID Act that are decision ready, we maintained at 51% over the MTF period. A number of systemic corruption cases that are decision ready, we maintained 2 over the MTF period. Percentage of all backlog decision ready cases completed, excluding systemic corruption, we maintained at 50% over the MTF period. Percentage of dockets referred to the National Prosecuting Authority within 30 days of being signed off, we maintained at 90% over the MTF period. And percentage of dismissal recommendation reports referred to the South African Police Services and or Municipal Services within 30 days of recommendations being signed off, we maintained at 90% over the MTF period. And then the next slide, we just flagged some of the adjustments on the indicators that we've made. I've already alluded to the ones relating to training. And on the number of systemic corruption cases identified, we've moved that to the operational plan rather than maintaining it here at this level. And then the decision ready case is completed. This indicator, we realized that is a duplication, then we maintained it as a strategic indicator with no changes to the target. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, honorable members. I will be taking you through legal services. The purpose of legal services is to provide legal advice, guidance, and support to manage the legal obligations and ensure constitutional, legislative, and also regulatory compliance by the Directorate. This program provides support to the Directorate as a whole, but as well, and in particular, to investigators who are the core program of the Directorate. The program consists of the following sub-programs or components. It's legal support and administration, litigation advisory services, investigation advisory services. It is important to note that in litigation advisory services, this is where litigation, civil litigation, and also labor litigation resides. In investigation advisory services, this is where we provide support to investigators during and after the investigations that they do. In terms of Section 8(1) of the IPID Act, it talks about the composition of the National Office, that it comprises of the Executive Director, Corporate Services, Investigation and Information Management Unit, and the Legal Services Unit. This point, the fact that according to the E&E, Legal Services has been removed as a budget program is an important part of our presentation, in that we are involved in a lot of litigation that emanates from the investigation that is done by the core program of the Directorate, and it's very important that the investigators receive the utmost support whilst they're conducting investigations and also after, during the litigation that emanates from that investigation. So it can never be overemphasized the fact that we do need a standalone legal services program that is going to be beefed up in terms of personnel and also a budget to go with. On the next slide, I'd like to speak to the strategic objective of legal services. The strategic objective here is to provide legal advisory services to investigators. It speaks to the percentage of legal advice which is provided to investigators from the total request that is received. The strategic target is at 90%, and it is 90% through the MTF period.
The next slide deals with the program performance indicators, and they are as follows. Percentage of written legal opinions provided to the department within 21 days of request, they are at 90% for the medium term period. Percentage of contracts finalized within 30 working days of request, they are also 90% throughout the MTF period. Percentage of civil and labor litigation matters that are processed, they are also at 100% during the medium term period. Percentage of arbitration dispute matters attended to within the regulated time frames, they are also at 100% during the medium term period. Percentage of oral legal advice which is provided to investigators within 24 hours of request, they are also sitting at 90% throughout the medium term period. Percentage of written legal advice provided to investigators within 48 hours of request, these are also sitting at 90% during the MTF period. There is also the percentage of prior requests that are finalized within 30 days. These are sitting at 100%, and this is as per the legislation. It's also important to pause here and indicate to the committee members that despite the decrease in the headcount during the period of 2016-17, legal services, rather, has maintained the targets, and we're striving to achieve them, despite the fact that we lost a number of four key personnel within the program. The last slide deals with the adjustment to the indicators. Two of the indicators were moved to the operational plan because they were seen as being too operational. This is the percentage of application of policing powers that are processed within 10 days. These are the policing powers that are processed for the investigators who are carrying out the investigations. It is also the number of practice notes and or directives that are issued to the investigators in order to assist them with the investigations that they carry out. In terms of the percentage of contracts that are finalized within 30 working days of request, this indicator is now separated from legal opinions, as prior legal opinions and the contracts were put into one indicator, but now, because they cannot be measured in the same way, they have been separated. Thank you.
Okay, Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues, good afternoon. I'll be taking you through the presentation for Program 4, which is Compliance Monitoring and Stakeholder Management. The purpose of Program 4 is to safeguard the principles of cooperative governance and stakeholder relations through the ongoing monitoring of the recommendations that are forwarded to our stakeholders, and also monitoring the compliance of the stakeholders in terms of their responsiveness in accordance with the Act. It's divided into two sub-programs, compliance monitoring, where the quality of the recommendations is being addressed, and this sub-program also has a unit called integrity strengthening, where we look into the integrity testing of our officials. The second sub-program is stakeholder management, whereby we look into managing the relations that we have with our stakeholders in terms of our provincial and national stakeholder engagements. And there is another leg which looks into the communication and marketing services of the directorate. Now, in terms of our strategic objective, we only have one strategic objective, which is to ensure an integrated communication and stakeholder engagement strategy. For the current financial year, 2017-18, we are looking into implementing 25% of the strategy, and that will be cutting through the whole of the MTEF. For our program performance indicators, we only have three. The first one talks to our community outreaches, which is a provincial competency. The target there is 108, which translates into 27 outreaches per quarter. That is also constant throughout the medium term. It's 108, it translates into 27 outreaches throughout the MTEP period. That means for each province, we expect them to conduct 3 outreaches per quarter. The other 2 are talking to our engagements with the stakeholders at both the national and the provincial level. Now, when we look to the adjustments that have been done to our program indicators, we have one that addresses our interactions with the media in terms of the media statements and the responses to the media inquiries. This one has been taken to the operational level. Result is too operational, so we moved it from the APP to the operational level. The second one are our station lectures. We felt this is outside our mandate. This is something that can be taken care of at the police academy. So we moved it from our responsibility. I will hand over to the AD to conclude on our presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks to the team for presenting. Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, with the budgetary allocations that we now have and with the possibility of it not being changed that we have to deal with this, our approach is generally to reprioritize, to look more at what impact we make. So we're not looking at numbers, we're looking at lower volumes but higher value investigations. And since November, that has been our approach. And in our own opinion, we've got good returns on that. But we could do so much more if we have the requisite budget. But we'll undertake to do regular monitoring of expenditure. And we'll continuously reprioritize. So the team with me at the EXCO level has been quite effective in reprioritizing and doing strategic management with very little resources and strategic reprioritization. The AXA Auditor General of South Africa Action Plan will continue to implement and monitor. And we'll continue with our cost containment measures, which in any event we've been practicing since 2014. IPED requires the support and assistance and intervention of the Ministry and the Portfolio Committee on Police in terms of assisting us with the amendment of the Constitutional Court pronouncement as it relates to the Act and those parts which are cannot pass constitutional muster, and then full implementation of the Forum Commission recommendations and the Auditor General's recommendations relating specifically to IPED's structural and operational independence. And the last point, perhaps the key point we want to make on this presentation, at a strategic level, without adequate financial and human resources, IPED will not be able to fulfill its mandate. Thus, IPED will not be able to make an impact on the reform and evolution of post-apartheid policy. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you to the Executive Director. Honorable Members, we will now continue to questions and concerns and matters that members want to raise. Maybe the first issues from my side, and then we'll go to Honorable Molabatsi. I just want to get an indication in terms of Section 28.1, items A to F, those issues that the Directorate is obliged to investigate. In terms of the cost constraints, is there any category that you are not now able to investigate? I just want to get a sense of that, that we can just deal with that. Then on Tuesday, National Treasury was part of the institutions that gave evidence to the committee in preparation of the various Mathis, I personally raised the issue of Marikana, and I've indicated that it's critical that that money must be made available. But I just want to know from IPET, say the baseline stays the same. For instance, last year you had a saving of 4 million in compensation. You couldn't use maybe that, ask Treasury to use that for that purpose. I just want to get an indication with regard to that. Just an issue I want to raise, I won't raise the detail, but it's the issue of feedback to complainants and stakeholders. Now, maybe we will invite you on another occasion, but for instance, from our side, we've made available certain requests and referrals to IPET since last year, and there's no feedback on those matters. Some of it involves serious allegations of police corruption and so on. So I just want to know, what is the, is there a template, is there a stakeholder referral system, timelines when people must get feedback? These matters was even raised with your PLO. So Executive Director, we need urgency there, that there's assurances that if there's complaints, even from ordinary members of the public or referrals by the PC, that's the Oversight Committee, it must be handled and there must be feedback. If there's no feedback, the impression is created it's not being helped, it's not being handled. So we need assurances but also feedback on that matter. Let's go to Honorable Molebatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is on your legal services unit had some problems during the previous financial year of underperformance. Has the situation changed? My second one, what type of capital assets will be procured during the 2017/18 financial year? My last one, and on this one, bear with me, I've been on sick leave for a while. Maybe you did explain it to the portfolio committee during my absence, but just bear with me. What is the situation regarding the police officers that were fingered during the Marikana incident? Are they still at work? Are they suspended? Are they criminally charged? What is the situation? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Molebatsi. Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is in slide 18. Please give clarity on the introduction of a performance indicators on the number of reports on risk maturity level. My second question, why the performance indicators regarding system corruption removed? My third question, in slide 11, what do you mean when you are saying IPD is experiencing a capacity constraint? In slide 17, what is the percentage of vacancy rates now?
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Mabija.
Thanks, Chair. There's no question as yet.
Honourable Ramatakane.
Oh, thank you, Honourable Chair, and to the IPET presentation as well. Thank them. Just a few questions. What I don't understand, maybe if we can explain. Treasury does not decide on the departmental program. Departmental program in terms of how you're funding those, it's a departmental matter. Now, you said at the beginning this program 3 was removed unilaterally. Now, I don't understand that part, because there must be an engagement between Treasury and IPET on financial matters. How did it happen that it's the first time I'm hearing this kind of of a report that just unilaterally they just decide they move to remove the program 3. And then the 5 million that you say you have not received, the last time we spoke, there was going to be some engagement with the executing authority around the 5 million, and because we did say that if that money is not found, then Falun Commission recommendations are not going to be fully implemented. It's actually a serious matter. Now, as today we're hearing again that you still don't have the 5 million rand. So of course we're going to make a recommendation around that issue. But you had a savings of 4 million rand in terms of compensation of employee. Why did you not motivate with Treasury to use that money in the Marikana Commission instead of just the money going to be returned? Number three, Chair, the cut and the money that we are talking about in terms of the goods and services, how is it going to affect the service delivery aspect of it? How is it going to? Because I think the importance of the iPad and the work they do in terms of the human rights aspect, in terms of ensuring that the constitution is adhered to, is critical. So if there is a service delivery that is required and there is, a reduction in terms of what impact will this have, if we can just get some clarification on that. And the organizational structure, you're saying that is can't. It's not implemented because of the resource issue. Now, obviously, in terms of the budget submission, can I just get some assistance to understand? During there have been a number of challenges with iPad. You may not know about this, but there is a requirement in terms of the submissions that are made to Treasury in terms of the financial year, looking for additional money and motivating quite strongly why this money is needed. Did iPad not do that, or did you actually do that? Now, do you have a kind of evidence that you can show us or give it to us to say, look, we have motivated for this money for this reason and that reason? And this is the response of Treasury, because I don't think that Treasury will simply block the progress. That there must be something that we don't know, but they can't just simply block the progress, particularly when it comes to the issues that deals with the Judicial Commission of Inquiry. You can't have a situation like that. You can't have a... So I think if you can help us to understand that, it will be important. The civil claims, the how is the civil claims going to be addressed, particularly the civil claims that happen as a result of the work between yourself and the SEPs. Is a resourceful way of dealing with that aspect. And the last one, Chair, for now, you talked about 27%, you talk about 9%. And I was wondering, in the budget, if you were looking at the year, this year is maybe what, more percentage, but you say if you compare that 2-3 years, there's not been actually an increase, that 27%, whatever percentage means, this amount. Now, I don't know whether you did the calculation in rent term. What are we talking about in terms of rent and cent when you look at it? I mean, 20, percentage can be misleading if you look at it. Maybe if you haven't done it, we'll understand it. You can still do it. Rand and dollar, what is it that we're talking about here? So that we can see the picture. Because I think as a committee, we want iPad to work. We want iPad to be able to do the things that they do. I mean, iPad is there to defend the powerless, the weak, when it comes to the issue of conduct. So it's very important work that it must do. So if you don't help us with that kind of information, we're unable to make a recommendation that in terms of our report, that helps you to realize the things you want to realize. So if you can help us with that, will be important, including the legal service program. What motivation has been advanced? I mean, how will you operate in the legal environment without legal assistance, without having in-house legal? Because if you go outside and look for legal opinion and legal assistance, you'll have to pay for it. And how are you going to pay for it if you don't even have the budget, sufficient budget? So these are the questions that I'm sure if you help us with the motivation, we will take them up. Has this matter been taken and handled before with Treasury, even before we come to the stage? And what has been their responses on it? Like, face to face. It would be useful to know what has happened and who was engaging with Treasury. But Treasury just to say, shut the door on you. Thank you, Chair.
Kone, Honorable Mbele.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the ED and his team. It's just three questions from my side, I think. The first one is just to get a sense and an update for the committee on the shift in relations between IPED and the police ministry, in particular between the ED and the minister, because we saw in the media that shortly after the new minister was appointed, they were able to share a press conference, and there was an indication that cooperative relations would be the order of the day, which is in contrast to the previous minister, where he had made things, to employ a euphemism, frosty. So just to ask for an update from the committee on that. My second question is also, I'm partly covered by Honorable Ramatlakane's question about this matter of the Treasury denial, but I would just like to get clarity and understanding of what the real implications of that were. In other words, was it a case of saying of, because I note from slide 7 that the year-on-year allocations are going up. So it goes from 242 odd million to 255, or almost 256 million for this financial year. But I don't know if, for example, that means that Treasury said, if you don't take out Program 3, then that increase would have been less than what it is, or that is the increase with Program 3 taken out, and if it was in there, there would have been more money. Just what the real time the real implications of that were for the allocation. And Chair, in particular, because I think the committee has been concerned since last year about the fact that IPED is constrained in implementing the expansion strategy that I think we all agreed was crucial for IPED to optimally realize its function and mandates. So to hear that even within those constraints, there's further curtailments is a concern for IPED playing its role in the policing environment. And so linked to that, as my third question, the committee received a presentation from the ED and the senior team last year about some of the high-profile cases that they are investigating, most of which, if I understood correctly, all of which, if I understood correctly, resided within the NSIT. And so I'd just like to find out what are the implications of these constraints for those systemic corruption and high-profile cases, if IPED is able to mitigate for those pressures internally by adjusting, or are we looking at, you know, some cases are going to have their completion time frames lengthened, or some cases are going to have to be, diluted somehow, maybe a smaller task team focused on them. Just what are the implications in that regard? Thanks, Chair.
Maybe just one issue on the financial matters as well. I think one of the maybe the options, and I think we've raised it previously with the ED, is maybe within the cluster, because that will be Treasury's second fallback position, apart from savings, in terms of looking within the cluster for additional money, and maybe the assistance of the executive authority and the committee in that process. So if the ED maybe can also just deal with that as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I will deal with some of the issues, and relevant program managers will deal with other aspects. And if we've missed out anything, just kindly remind us again to deal with it. Are we still at quorum, sir?
Welcome to go ahead.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think key issues, key indicators to some of the questions which the Honorable Members raised about the state of IPED is the fact, simple fact, that we've been forced to freeze posts. One of the posts we've been forced to freeze is a Director, Investigation Advisory Services. So we had to take a decision. Do we leave that director there, or do we add in additional investigators in? Where do we put our resources? And the decision taken is to put all the resources, Honorable Mbele, into those systemic corruption cases, because we want to make impact. Now, and it's not to undermine any other offense, whether it's a common assault or whatever, but in terms of impact that IPED must make, which is about reform and evolution of post-apartheid police service. If your highest level of police officers are corrupt, there's no way you can change attitude and how police conduct themselves, because subordinate level of police officers, lower levels, will look to the top and say, well, they've got away with it. So we can do 1,000 investigations on assault common, and it won't make the same impact that a high-level investigation against systemic corruption. Or, in some cases, death of suspects by senior officers would make. So why shouldn't a constable use unnecessary force when senior officers are torturing people to death? Why shouldn't a officer on the side of the road take 200 rand when senior officers are taking millions? That's the question. That's really it. So we've taken a decision. That's what we'll do. And we, in answer to your question, Honorable Chairperson, we are sacrificing the speed at which investigations are done in the provinces for your A to F cases, because we are pulling resources from provinces to deal with systemic corruption in order to assist the NSIT. So it is having an impact. We are slowing down. But it's a kind of negative impact we can live with because we're kind of compensating, but it's not sustainable. We are going to run into trouble. So we have frozen a number of posts, and that's an indication of the impact. The issues of the Marikana and the 4 million saving, CFO will deal with that. And also the issue of the legal services unit. Now, in the absence of a handover report from the acting executive director, Khamenyani, now Major General Khamenyani, we don't know the reason why you went to Treasury to terminate as an E&E unit legal services. But they say it comes from him, so maybe at some stage he'll be able to explain it. And at the crucial period of IPED fighting for its independence, this was done. So they must explain that. And related to the issue of the legal services is we've raised the issue with Treasury on numerous occasions with tears in our eyes, begging and pleading for a sympathetic ear. There is none. So I think the point made by one of the honorable members was that you cannot have an organization, institution, an independent one like ours that does not have a legal services functioning as a full program. Honorable Molebatsi, I think you were on leave the last time we came here, but from what was said by General Mgwenya, is that there was a disciplinary for Marikana people and none were found guilty. But 34 dead people, how none were found not guilty on anything, we don't understand. That's in a disciplinary. So we are still having problems, and none of the recommendations came from us on the Marikana. It was handled by SAPS on their own. I stand to correction, but Sisoko can advise on that. But Mgwenya indicated that they had the process, and none of the people are found guilty of anything. We've investigated torture and assaults also. We've investigated murders in scene 2, where we have evidence, we've identified people. Nothing has been done from a disciplinary point of view. And that seems to be some of the trend from senior management in SAPS. So, for example, the intimidation / and or kidnapping or forceful detention, illegal detention of Floxum Internet SARS officers, we recommended immediate suspension of the unit that was involved in that. We haven't been informed of what disciplinary action has been taken. We were told it was allocated to a General Zikali to deal with the matter, and we haven't heard anything since. So this is what we're dealing with. This is happening in post-apartheid South Africa. There are other matters of torture. There's a team that's been committing torture for at least more than 11 years. Cases have come through ICD and IPED. And we've spoken to the National Director of Public Prosecutions about it. There was a decision taken to prosecute them in 2012. And that is to put all the cases together, because there are many cases, that hasn't taken place. But in fairness, we have written to the National Director of Public Prosecutions, bringing it to his attention. But those people had disciplinaries, those torturers, and they were found not guilty in the disciplinaries. And in one of the issues, there's a dead person. In fact, there are two dead people. How this passed judicial scrutiny, I'm not sure. One person was shot in his back while handcuffed, in full view of everyone. So we'll be looking at that, and we'll be taking it up with the National Director of Public Prosecutions in case he might feel it necessary to appeal that finding that it was a justified shooting, that the person was attempting to escape. This is 2006. The issue related to risk maturity from Honorable Mullah will be dealt with by Program 1. And the issue of what was changed in the strategic objectives, and that what was too operational. And the third question, I didn't get it, but I'm sure one of my colleagues got it. Honorable Ramatlakhanna, you are aware that you were the person who appealed for us to sit together and get the $5 million for Marikana. You will also recall there was a deathly silence coming from the former minister. Nothing was done. So I am hopeful that with the new minister, there will be assistance given to us and there will be support given to us for the things that have to be done, the pronouncements of a judicial commission of inquiry. I'm sure that will be done. It will affect our ability. This lack of adequate funding will affect the way we operate. For example, we need, in terms of international treaties that we are signatories to, relating to torture, we have to visit police cells and look at conditions in which detainees are kept. We are unable to do it now. So our international obligations are at risk also. The Treasury response is the issue that was raised by Honorable Bjerkman, is that it's a cluster issue. This is what your minister agreed to. We think that situation will change. Civil claims, litigation, legal services. To give you an example, so far, the bill for litigation raised by Acting National Commissioner Patlane for IPED to be able to defend against his application to declare our search warrant invalid. And remember, nothing was taken from his house, but to declare the search warrant invalid, for us to respond to that, is taken in excess of 900,000 rand. Just and in terms of time, honourable members, it's taken us the whole of March and April to deal with that matter. So, the acting head of South African Police Services sits with a big litigation budget. He sits with crime intelligence. He sits with a unit from Northwest, which counter-investigates us, interferes with our witnesses, and he launches a civil claim against us, civil litigation. This is while we are investigating in normal course as a result of a complaint received. We deal with this matter. We've got a small litigation budget. We've got 3 people in legal services. We have to deal with that. So that's how unfair it is. If the honorable members and the public expect us to make an impact, we are having a war, a legal war started against us by those who are abusing their power, like Acting National Commissioner Patlane, because that's an abuse of power. To send a unit from the Northwest into Gauteng to do counter-surveillance on us and counter-investigation. In democratic South Africa, in a constitutional democracy, that's what's happening. So, understand, we are a little David fighting against a big Goliath with a big, long pocket of litigation purse. And here we've got a tiny amount with a whole big legal section doing this. So understand what we have to deal with. So when you ask the question, how are we going to deal with civil claims and civil litigation, it becomes an almost impossible mandate. So understand that. Honorable Mbele asked about relations. I think they have improved exponentially, I think would be the correct description. So we're not frosty anymore. We're reasonably warm. I think it's getting better. I'm looking forward to it getting really hot. High-profile cases, the only reason why the high-profile cases are not suffering is because we are pulling resources from provinces, but it means the provinces then get to suffer. But we're not going to let off any fuel or any pressure off the accelerator on the systemic corruption and high-level cases. It's going to go on, and I'm sure you will see results. I will just ask my colleagues to add where I have left out anything, where I have omitted, and then if we've left out anything, still just to revert and remind us what we've left out.
Maybe, Edie, the issue of referrals by the portfolio committee.
I think I will deal with that one. It's to be open and fair and honest. Not much of those referrals has been worked upon because we've been caught up with these other high-profile cases, limited resources. I think the NSIT has lost a few key members, senior members, but I think I'll just leave it there. Some have just left, decided to go to police, some to crime intelligence, but that's another story.
In terms of the feedback protocol, that I think that is the issue maybe Mr. Sorko can address. I mean, if there's a complaint from a stakeholder, for instance, if I've got a complaint and I receive every day from members of the public and colleagues, regarding police, and there's in some instances some provincial commissioners within 24 hours, I've got a report back, issue solved. Now, you're the oversight institution, you should set the high standard. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, we don't have to go into the detail, but I think we need some work there to be done. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. With the complaints directed to my office, within 24 hours, there is a response to the complainant. And it's copied into the relevant province and for allocation of an investigation team.
Chairperson, I think I understand the matter that you are referring to. It was a number of cases that we had to respond to. So it was an issue of getting information from provinces. So, but there was a delay, and I'm not making excuses there. There was a delay from our side in terms of getting relevant information. Even when the information came to us, but we were not satisfied with the information that came. So we had to go through verification process before that information is provided to the committee, because we cannot give committee information that we ourselves were not satisfied with. So that was the cause of the delay. However, we're working on that, and probably in the next week that specific matter will be addressed.
Thank you for that assurance. Thanks. Responses?
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just to give clarity with regards to some of the historic allocations and the interactions that have been happening with Treasury, with our executive authority. Maybe just firstly to highlight what you are referring to as a 4 million saving. During the 2016-17 financial year, during the adjustment budget, the IPED received a budgetary cap of 4 million rand in its area of compensation of employees. And that cut was a result of a proposal which National Treasury brought to the department at that stage, where National Treasury, in their analysis of expenditure trends, historic expenditure trends, not just of the 16-17 financial year, felt that the IPED was not fully utilizing its budget appropriations, particularly in the area of compensation of employees. And in an effort to prevent the department from overspending, felt that it was important to then cut or reduce the budget of the IPED by 4 million rand. After Treasury raised this concern
after their analysis, the department did respond to them in writing, as well as have numerous engagements with them, where we tried to bring them on board as to the actual realities that the department was facing on the ground. We do concede that, yes, in 2012-13 and 13-14 financial year, there were savings in the area of compensation of employees. But for all the subsequent years, the department fully spent on its budget. In fact, as a result of the constant reductions on the baselines of the IPID since 2013-14, the department was starting to experience pressures in the area of compensation of employees, to the point where the department was then forced to freeze certain posts just to remain within the ceiling. They even warned the department that as we stand at the date before adjustment budget, we already are projecting possible over expenditure of the budget if expenditure continues to operate as it was in the first two quarters. And as a result, management has started to introduce measures to avoid the department overspending in terms of curtailing some of the non-core areas so that we can deliver in core areas and still remain within baseline. But despite the communication, the interactions, the written evidence that was provided to Treasury, they proceeded with a 4 million cut on the baseline of IPID. As the budget continued, even if you look at our expenditure reports per annum, you can see the pressure that was still being experienced by the department after that cut. Even with the pressures on Marikana, we had even pleaded the Treasury to say, rather than cut us, at least then give us that additional funding that was called for by the Commission and curtail our current contractual obligations so that at least we can complete and ring-fence that funding for the Marikana investigation. But unfortunately, I'm not sure whether it's due to not understanding the issues that we are facing in the department that a 4 million cut was introduced. And even if you look at our expenditure now at year end, the fact that we spent the budget and we did not overspend was as a result of management interventions to avoid the department incurring unauthorized expenditure. We sat on a weekly basis dealing with the commitments that we had on hand. Which are we going to service? Negotiating with people that we owed money to say, can we defer you so that we can pay this? We promised by this date. There were numerous interventions that management did, which were communicated to Treasury, communicated to Portfolio Committee, so that our stakeholders were aware of the situation and that management was doing all it could to remain within the ceiling, which fortunately we were able to achieve. But what that means is that we are sitting with accruals of more than 18 million, which is worth more than even the 4 million cut that the department had faced. So it was not a true reflection at that stage that the department was going to underspend and were trying to save it. But unfortunately, due to this miscommunication of understanding what the department is facing versus the historical reports that are produced, if you look at historic spending trends, I think that may have led to the situation where there was a 4 million cut in a budget, yet the department is sitting with accruals of 18 million at year end after implementing further cost containment measures, curtailing operations as much as practically possible so that we can remain within the ceiling that we reside in. And it is true that we have sent through requests to Treasury subsequent to that budget cut where we still highlighted the pressures that we're experiencing. We highlighted the call to assist us with regards to the Marikana funding so that we could finalize that investigation. Those communications have gone to Treasury, and we are still under the deliberations or engagement stage with National Treasury to try and find each other in terms of trying to assist the department going forward. We have also pleaded with the executive authority in terms of getting support, particularly at the cluster level engagement stage where we can negotiate within police services and within the justice cluster to try and get assistance where we can, particularly to the core things that need to be funded in terms of sustaining operations and being able to finalize the Marikana investigation. So we have, as we had highlighted, I think, in the first part of our presentation, in terms of the engagements that we are having with the minister, those are some of the things that are on the table and are being engaged at all of the various forums in terms of trying to get assistance from the service, assistance from the cluster, assistance from National Treasury with regards to sorting out the funding predicament that the IPID is involved in. So
we are constantly engaged with Treasury. We do understand that we may not be on the same page based on the information that maybe the parties have before them, and we've agreed with National Treasury that we need to sit down and really understand the issue so that when we make recommendations or when we move forward, we are moving in the same direction, particularly when it comes to the funding of the IPET going forward. I think then with regards to motivations, yes, obviously there is evidence that has happened. And we don't only leave it to your written formal motivations. We actually have engagement where the senior management, including our accounting officer, engages vigorously with Treasury so that they understand what is the basis for the motivations that we forward to them. And sometimes they've actually understood and said, we hear you, but we also have no way to look with. I know there was even a year where they advised us to really push the engagement with the executive authority, for example, with the Marikana issue, to say Marikana was funded to a certain element within the police services. Maybe you need to go back to the executive authority to see if you cannot get assistance with regards to that funding, which were some of the engagements that we did have. It's just unfortunate that at that stage there was no real movement in that area. So we will continue to have those engagements. We will continue to try and see within the cluster and within the service how we can move forward with regards to funding of the IPED. But I think what was important for today was also to bring the portfolio committee on board with regards to the real situation that's happening on the ground, where you don't just see the figures, like you said, where you see 29%, because you're comparing 255 to 197 million, but that's growth over 4 to 5 years. So what's really happening is that the year-on-year growth, that 3.7% that we had now in this financial growth, is way below inflation. It's not sustainable over the long term, and that's just the message that we wanted to bring to the portfolio committee, because that is the same engagement that we're currently having with the other stakeholders so that they understand the impact of financial decisions on this organization. I think I may have covered in totality the questions that were posed regarding it.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to your question on Section 281A to F, whether we're able to investigate those matters. We are investigating those matters, Chairperson. Our reality, as we've indicated also in the last presentation, that we have to reprioritize. So, for instance, we held a provincial forum. I held a meeting with provincial heads in terms of prioritizing on these matters. For instance, that they become innovative in their own area of responsibility in terms of how they deal with the challenges that we have. If, for instance, because police officers will then report an assault case, for instance, and then they say, here's a docket, come fetch the docket. So what arrangements can we make with the police, for instance, that rather than going to each different police stations, rather they take the dockets to a central point like the provincial commissioner's office where these dockets can be taken from there, and then we see then how we can prioritize resources to be able to deal with those matters. So these are some of the innovations that are happening in different provinces to try and reprioritize these matters. So the reality is that the intensity of working on those matters based on these budget constraints, based on the freezing of positions, is not the same. Hence, you realize that even the targets would not be as high as they would be. They would then reflect the reality of our situation. That is basically that with regard to the priority. That is linked to your question, Honorable Matlakane, on this, the impact of these budget constraints on our investigation. So, as the executive director indicated, that we took a strategic decision that we will prioritize high-impact cases where we then assemble teams to work on those matters whilst we have resources also at the provinces to deal with your normal day-to-day cases. So try to keep that kind of balance. The reality, though, is that it will obviously affect the output, as it were, in the provinces, because in these high impact cases, we have to take these resources from the provinces and put them in these teams to investigate these high profile matters. So that is the reality of our situation.
Honorable Ramlakhani, Mr. Soku, you can just. Yeah.
Chair, I just want to understand the definition of these high profile cases versus less profile cases. What are you talking to? If you can give me a description. If somebody is raped in a police cell, why will that fall in terms of your high profile? If you're just going to, just at least so that I understand what we're talking about.
In terms of the prioritization, Honorable Matlakane, what we looked at was the high-profile case we're referring to is the cases that are serious cases. Some of them would be on your media. They would involve senior police officers. And then in terms of prioritization, we then took a strategic decision that would prioritize your cases like death in custody, death as a result of police action, rape by a police officer, rape in custody, as well as corruption cases. So it will then follow in that. So those will be our high impact cases and high priority cases that we prioritize. And then the other matters like your assault and all that, then they will fall below on that list. And then with regard to the performance indicator on systemic corruption, Honorable Mola, we did not remove the identification part of it, but the indicator on the completion of these matters is still in our performance indicators. So that we've retained. What we are saying is that initially, the process would be first identify if this it's a systemic corruption matter, and then it goes through an internal administrative process of approval, and then once it's approved, then it's investigated. Now, the part that relates to the investigation is still retained in our performance indicator. However, the administrative part relating to identification and approval, that's what we moved to our operational plan. The situation with Marikana, Honorable Mlebazi, members who were fingered. Remember that we said in our last presentation, we indicated our engagement with the National Director for Prosecution in terms of all the investigations that needed to be done. We have obtained all warning statements with regard to the members that the investigation have revealed their involvement as per also agreement with the prosecutors that are working with us on these matters. So all these matters are now with the prosecutors, who must then make a decision on the prosecution or not. What we've picked up is that there is quite a number of these members who were involved in Marikana who has left the police, quite a substantial number of them who have left the police service. I think that is all.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will deal with the issue that was raised by the Honourable Member about the risk maturity reports that we were talking about on our indicators. As I indicated that it's system-generated reports where the system would ask us questions about our control environment, if we've got policies to regulate our environment, if we've got the controls in place that will assist us to detect when there are problems, as well as if we and the issues of information security as well as physical security, like it was alluded to that we do the assessment of our security in terms of risk, then the system will ask if those have been implemented or not. And I also indicated that it has got 5 levels. We are currently on 3.5 because certain things like your disaster recovery plan, we are unable to implement those, and the implementation of mitigating measures, we are unable to implement those due to budgetary cuts and other issues. So it's a system that we must feed with information indicating the status, the real status of IPED insofar as our environment. Then it will give us how mature are we as in terms of good governance as the department. So we produce those reports and then we analyze it and then we give the recommendations, of which it's very little that can be done without the resources. So it's about that. Another issue that I wanted to emphasize is the issue that the CFO has alluded to. When the ED returned in October, we had a meeting with National Treasury in our offices where the issue of the 4 million was discussed. No amount of convincing we could make with them regarding that matter, because they informed us that even though there were red flags at the time showing that we are unable to cope as a department, they were expected, the National Treasury, to look across government departments to identify money to fund the university fees must fall. So it's untrue that it was as a result of IPs maybe not spending and so on. They are looking for an excuse as far as we are concerned as a management of IP right now. We explained everything and they could see how we were moving in terms of our cash flow as the department. But they didn't take any, listen any. So we were one of the departments that we targeted to get that money to fund the fees must fall.
Any other responses outstanding? Then we'll go to the second round, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'd like to answer the question that was posed by Honourable Memo Libatsi. The question was pertaining the performance of legal services in the past year, which was 2015-2016. In the year 2015-2016, legal services within IPED were supposed to end the year with a staff complement, or rather legal staff in the program, being 5, but we ended with 3 individuals only. And our performance at that time was sitting at 5%. Fast forward to 2016-17, the same 3, instead of 5 legal personnel, we ended off the year with a percentage of 65. So there's been an increase of 22% within the program, showing a vast increase, despite the fact that we are still sitting without a full staff complement. Thank you.
Just to follow up on the legal services, from November to the end of the financial year, at the end of March, it was probably the most requests for investigative information under Section 205 or of warrants of arrest or search warrants ever done in a similar period in IPED ever. So how are they coping? They work on weekends and public holidays, and their social lives have been messed up because they have to work. It's the only way we can do it. There's no other way. So it's not sustainable. We will face burnout.
Members, let's go to the second round. Maybe just the issue of impact of IPED, and I think I agree with the Executive Director that going for high-profile cases, it's a deterrent, and it also relates to better, maybe, conduct from SAPS. But I just want to maybe get a sense of the current cases intake. We've seen a few public order incidents around the country. If we look at SAPS itself, there's a huge increase in civil claims against SAPS. So I want to get a sense from IPET. It's 5 years since Marikana. In terms of your own assessment, is there improvement in police conduct, unit level, but also at station level? What is your view as an independent institution? I just want to get that sense from you. The second issue relates to your highest high-profile case. When do you envisage that matter to be finalized, for submission to the NPA? Then one interesting matter that was raised is the disciplinary cases in case of Marikana. Now, in our oversight visit or our study visit, the IPCC in the UK, they've got a menu choice. They can decide whether they can, run a DC, or they can refer it, or they can monitor it. Now, later this year, we're going to hopefully go to the IPET Amendment Act. Now, the question is, and I mean, there's a lot of constraints, and I mean, even the A2F, but would that be an option? I just want to know, contributing to better police conduct, where they maybe to add an additional section to say, well, IPET can monitor, self-investigate, or SAPS can do it himself. Would that maybe address that issue? I know it's a tall order, but would that maybe be an option to look at, going forward? And then maybe I think it's good if the relationships are good currently on all levels, but in our environment, things change. I just want to know, is there, we don't have to go through the detail, but is there maybe additional measures, also judging from what the Secretariat said, to further strengthen IPET's independence for possible interference? Because things might be fine, but history taught us that things might change. And I mean, it's about long term. We don't talking about 2019, we're talking about the future. It's important that independent institutions should be secured, so I just want to get a sense from the ED on that. Honourable Mulabatsi. Honourable Mabija. Honourable Mabija, anything from your side? Honourable Ramatlakane.
No, Chair, just a few pointers here. I can remember the last discussion where the former Minister of Police was part of it about the 5 million. My impression at the end of that meeting was that there was a commitment. I think General Kuza was sitting here. I think if I paraphrase him, he said, because we're actually insisting that there's some indication that must come out. His party short said, no, if official can meet, I'm sure we can resolve this issue. That was his party, the party short. Now, I don't know whether that meant anything, because it sounded like it didn't mean anything. Because he was here, and General Pasan was not here. It was him who said, if we can meet as official, we can find a solution to this problem. Now that solution has not been found, and it's pity that we didn't ask this question earlier in the police when they were here. I want to make a firm recommendation on this. I think, Honorable Chair, the evidence that the IPET has of engagement and letters of exchange around this particular issue, particularly Marikana issues, we should be privy to that evidence. Two, we should have a meeting which include IPET and Treasury on this matter. I just can't understand, it's probably beyond me, that any person can attempt to frustrate the completion of the Judicial Commission of Inquiry findings in a manner that it is almost coming out here. So the meeting with the Treasury. See, the Treasury is a department, but it has individual in it. So far, I've been hearing the Treasury. There is nobody that don't hear whether there was a DG involved, there was this one involved, just Treasury, which is something that you can't really put your hand on. I don't know what that means. So we should have a meeting with Treasury. Now, if need be, Chair, I think the escalation of the, because we would need to make recommendation in the ERRR report around this issue. So perhaps it's fair to have a discussion engagement with these affected bodies before we make our recommendation, unless we go on the tangent and they say, no, it is in fact not so. So we should have that meeting, including the discussion with the executing authority, the EA, about this matter. It's critical that we do so, because the matter that has been dealt with here, unless people forget, 34 people were killed in Marikana. This is the thing that needs to be resolved. Whether they, I mean, maybe this is for people who have got short memories about it. So I think we should make that, I want to make a firm recommendation that we do that before we finalize our ERRR report. So that at least, and then your time frame, as soon as possible, we get the evidence about this kind of engagement. Thank you, Chair.
For that, yes, I mean, we've got next week. I mean, I think the EA's PLO is here, so I think he has the request. But we will definitely take that up. Honourable Bailey.
Thanks, Chair. I think my sort of a two-sided concern I have that has come out of the ground we covered in the previous round is, on the one hand, I'm concerned about an issue of, call it the irrational exercise of power. In terms of if I heard correctly from the ED, part of the contribution for the challenge around Treasury's treatments of the Program 3 issue was a certain feedback or inputs from the former acting ED. The communication to Treasury indicated or kind of gave the enablements for Treasury to take that stance. That was my understanding. Now, Chair, given what we understand about the importance of that legal services unit for the work of the IPED, for the core work of the IPED, that kind of action on the parts of the acting ED at the time would be an irrational action, an irrational decision in the exercise of his powers of office. And this is a theme that's coming up a lot more often. We're seeing, we just had a High Court decision in the last half hour relating to the cabinet reshuffle, but I'm not going to get into that. So it's becoming more salient and thankfully more enforced that the exercise of public power must be rational and must be aligned to the fulfillment of either legislative or constitutional mandates. The other concern is then in terms of what has been said by the CFO and by the ED that projecting the current trends going forward, we are looking at an unsustainable future. We're looking at a train whose train tracks are going to run out, either because of below inflation increases for the budgets or because of this particular issue right now around Program 3. So something is going to have to give at some point. It's either going to have to give in terms of the ministry becoming very cooperative going forward, and I hear that's one of the hopes of the ED, that ongoing engagements with the minister will yield fruit in that regard. It might have to give in terms of the parliamentary space, where, as I keep advocating, I think Parliament can be a lot more proactive in assisting departments through money bill amendments that come from departments, because departments only draft budgets. Parliament can amend them before we approve it. Or possibly it might finally give in the judicial space, where and this is, I guess, partly a question for the ED, if his team would consider it, is to seek a retrospective invalidation of whatever process led up to them being where they are now, because the premise was irrational. Whatever documentation or whatever correspondence led to Treasury feeling that they could take the stance was irrational, and therefore could be ruled invalid, and set that aside, and all subsequent implications of that. Of course, the irony is that because the legal services unit is so constrained, that's the very capacity you need to undertake that litigation. But that's an option. But Chair, we have heard that something has to give if IPED is to both be sustainable and ultimately be able to meet its obligations. Again, the Section 23 issue, investigators have to be paid at a particular standard according to the law. If they can't meet that, they are unintentionally and technically breaking the law, and as the law-making institution, we have to prevent and enable their fulfillment of their obligation. So I guess that's more of a comment than anything, but I guess there is that one question to the ED, is could they consider some sort of litigation to invalidate, at least insofar as the role of the former acting ED led them into this hole? Thanks, Chair.
Right, members, I just want to get an indication if there's any further questions at this stage. Doesn't seem so. So let's go to the final responses. Edie and your team.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. On the last one, Honourable Mbele, perhaps litigation will not be necessary. Perhaps I'm hopeful. Perhaps it's idealistic, but maybe Treasury will see that it was an irrational decision. I think we also have to look back in with more seriousness. There was a series of irrational decisions relating to the policing sector. When you look at DPCI and the appointment of the removal of Dramat on spurious grounds, and the replacement with Inklameza, then the suspension of CBA, the same happened in IPED. So if the more harder look at it, there's no innocent explanation for it. And then, so the Khamanyan is appointed, he then suspends Sissoko and Kuba and eventually gets rid of them because someone had an idea that it must be done. But it was quite systematic, and Khamanyan says everything he did with the blessing of his political principle. You must also remember that at that stage when litigation was launched, by myself as executive director and by myself as an individual, the moment I had been suspended, IPED then withdrew its action to assert its independence. All of those decisions together make up a series of irrational decisions. My own view is it's not a coincidence. The issue is someone must try and find an innocent explanation for me as to why all of this happened. I don't think you will. So on that one, that would be my response. I'm hoping with the intervention of this committee would not necessitate going to court and resorting to litigation to get Treasury, and I'm sure the senior officials in Treasury we'll see the wisdom of maybe revoking that approach that was done. In any event, the removal of the ED at that stage was declared unlawful and unconstitutional. On the important question from Honorable Bjerkman, the issue relating to whether the police should themselves decide what to do. Well, there isn't a best practice for us to copy. We are the best practice. The rest of the world is looking to us as the independent body, as an example of a true independent investigative body. So we are the model. Now, we could not have envisaged everything when the legislatures made the act and passed it, and that is why we will amend it. But we still are the front runner in the world about the model for policing. The fact that we've been underfunded, the fact that there's resistance from the police, it's about poor police management, the fact that police do not want to ruin relationships with their colleagues, some who've gone to college with them. So they'll rather take a decision which sees them, and it's referred to in the police parlance as the blue curtain. They take a behind-the-blue-curtain decision, which basically says, I'll help you out, don't worry, I'll sort it out for you in the disciplinary. You'll be not guilty even though there are 34 dead bodies. Don't worry, we'll sort it out for you. So that's it. But the way we've approached recently in the last 6 months, IPED investigations, we've become victims of our own success, our own impact, in the sense that we have now an unprecedented amount of complaints coming forward. That's the one thing. And complaints, I feel it in my office, have exponentially increased. That's the one. Secondly, most of our info, we don't have, like General Patlani, an intelligence service to give us information. Most of our information at this stage, though, come from policemen. So policemen have been given hope by the investigations into these seniors. And most of our sources of information about corruption and murder and mayhem come from within the police service. So for us, it's unprecedented within IPED that this has happened. Policemen want to do the right thing, the vast majority of them, and we should respect them for that. So we have made an impact, and it is changing. But the willingness of senior management to actually discipline people would ultimately be found as one of the reasons why IPED came into existence, to have more teeth to bite a bit more effectively than ICD. Thanks.
Right, other responses?
Thank you, Chairperson. When we look at our statistical information, it suggests to us that there isn't any improvement in terms of behavior, because we're picking up an increase rather than a decrease. There was a slight decrease when you look at, for instance, 14-15 comparing with 15-16. There's a slight decrease in 15-16, but then you have an increase in 16-17. Obviously, the stats will come when we present our annual report. You will see the increase. But the increase for 16-17 is exponential compared to 15-16. So that suggests to us that the behavior, there is no improvement in terms of behavior. But there could be another thing to it. There could be that because of these investigations we are doing, then we get more reporting of all these wrong things that we're doing. The reality, Chairperson and members, is that once, and this is our experience, that, for instance, based on these high-profile investigations that we're doing, as the AD says, that we are now receiving a lot of information from the police regarding corruption and all the wrong things that are happening within the police. It suggests to us that people tend to be quiet when they think there won't be consequence. But when they see that there is some consequence, something happening, they tend to come more out. And I think that is what it's happening. So when I look at the stats, it's a bit of mixed bag, but it does not suggest any decrease, rather more of an increase. With regard to when we will finalize the investigation, we would prefer to finalize the investigation like tomorrow, Chairperson. Unfortunately, our reality is that it is a complex investigation. For instance, we've been able to get a unit within Treasury that will assist us with the forensic part of the investigation. So they will assist us with that because it's also a costly exercise, because analyze transactions and so forth and so forth. So it will be hard to put a time frame to it, you know. Our investigators are working flat out, weekends, every time to try and get this matter to finality, especially that we understand the importance of it, not only for IPED, but for the criminal justice cluster and for the country itself, based on the profile of the case. Whether we consider prosecuting it was just reminding me that there was another case of related to this matter of defeating the ends of justice, which we completed that investigation and provided to the NPA. After the NPA evaluated the case, and because of this, what we regard as an abuse of power by the suspect in our investigation, in terms of interfering with our investigation and approaching the witnesses in our investigation, the NTPP then decided no, they will rather decide on, because initially they were like going to decide on that defeating the ends of justice case on its own, and then the corruption matter will follow. But then they then decided that no, they will then decide on them all at once. That is the corruption as well as the defeating the ends of justice. So that is one of the issue related to that. Now, the other matters, we also engaged with the DPP, and we will be discussing on trying to get these matters on the court roll as soon as possible, like the matters that the executive director was referring to regarding murders and tortures and so forth, which have been a long outstanding.
One last one, Honorable Chairperson, the issue is our investigators, IPED investigators, who were involved in this investigation of the case mentioned, were yesterday counter-investigated and given warning statements by that same unit that came from Northwest, with really weird kind of charges. So it's there's an investigation of attrition taking place, if I can put it that way. There was no need to make our investigator suspects, because they've investigated a senior official. But that is what has happened, and that is what's continuing to happen, and that's the circumstances under which we have to operate. So in essence, our independence has been compromised by the very suspect who is sitting on top there and instructing people to counter investigate on us.
Chairperson, specifically regarding what the ED has just raised now, and also maybe as we go on the IPED amendment, this is one critical issue that the committee must also assist us with in Parliament. Because it cannot be that when we investigate senior members of the SAPS, then they in turn initiate investigations against our investigators and witnesses in our investigation, just to counter what we're investigating. It then defeats the whole purpose why IPED was created, because now state power is being used to deflect the investigations, and it's used by senior. We don't have this kind of problem when we investigate junior police officers. But now we investigate senior police officers, this comes out. It cannot be.
No, wait, Chair. I'm sorry to the NGO. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. No, Chair. The point I was trying to make. I'm very worried about this information or statement that is being made by IPED. And we can't just not do anything about it, because it's raised with us that these kind of things happen. So I think we need to have another discussion with it. Next week we need to have a discussion with it. I think I'm not going to suggest anything except to say we need to have a discussion about it next week, so that we can actually get to the bottom of it. This just can't happen. You see, if something like this happened, this is my most fear that reminds people about what happened yesterday over the, this tendency like this must be nipping apart immediately when it happens, because I can just imagine what can happen in the night. I can just close my eye and imagine what happened at night. So I think as an urgent matter, Chair, that we should try and process this discussion to put a stop to this, or to report it somewhere where action can be taken, because you can't just allow it to continue like this. That's all I wanted just to say, Chair.
Maybe we can, I'll come to that. I just want to maybe the one issue that we just need, also from IPED, we struggled the whole week with the SAPs, but we eventually got it this afternoon, is the IPED TID document, the Technical Indicator Description document of your, because I think we couldn't find it on the website. So if we can just have it as soon as possible, because we want to next week finalize our report, and we need that. That's one of the, I think it must be available, because the AG didn't raise it with me, but I think if we can just have that as a copy available. Then the last issue that was raised by Mr. Sisokan, and also highlighted Mr. Ramantukane, of course it's a huge concern, but I think it's the issue is twofold. When we go to the IPED Amendment Act, we must look at the various options, but again, it's also a matter for the executive authority, because he is the supervisor with relation to some of the role players. So I think we will discuss that next week, Wednesday. We will also on Tuesday, we will deal with it. But I think it's a huge concern for us, because it's quite similar, you know, in. I don't want to make the analogy, but if there's one complaint, the other complaint, it's that kind of thing, you know, and it's not correct. IPED must be able to do their job effectively without interference, without undue pressure. But of course, in this environment, we know what is the dynamics. But we will then process that next Wednesday. So thank you, honorable members, for your assistance during this week with our process. We will then meet next Wednesday, 9 o'clock, dealing with CIRA. Then I also want to thank the Executive Director and his team for the presentation. We've taken note of the challenges, the issues, and also the progress. We will consider that when we do our report. Of course, we are of the view that IPED should be properly resourced to do the job effectively. The issue of Marikana funding is non-negotiable, because we can't have, on the one hand, SAPS is getting, I think, close to 500 million over the MTF, and IPED is not given the same due. So I think it's important that money must be made available. But I think it's also going to be critical looking at the core functions of IPED, that the Treasury will have to definitely explain, their reluctance. And I think the Executive Authority will have to definitely give the necessary support to IPED, because at the end of the day, it's also about human rights culture in the country. It's also about the police force or police service that is professional and demilitarized. So that is, in the end, the end goal. It's not only about IPED. It's also about the SAPS where the people have trusted. So that should be the goal. So thank you very much. The meeting is closed.
Was an instant. Mm-hmm.